This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Discreet. And keep your freak to yourself. But your mama lied to you all this time. She knows as well as you and I.
Pleasure and pain. Oh, love can push you to the limit. you'd still get burnt. It takes strength to face the truth. In a lonely world, love can be cruel. Between pleasure and pain, only love can push you to the limit. Set your heart on fire, then burn you with love's brutal flame. Only love can push you. Only love can push you. Only love can push you to the limit. Only love can push you. Only love can push you. Only love can push you.
The following program contains subject matter that portrays gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people as first-class citizens, deserving of an equal share of the American dream. Topics like this are known to piss off televangelists, backwater preachers, some talk show hosts, blue-haired biddies, several members of Congress, and other socially unacceptable outcasts like radical right-wing nut jobs. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
Tuned into After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude, a continuing tradition here on KPFT 90.1 FM. The crew of After Hours is ready to bring you news, interviews, discussions, and music geared to the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community and our allies. We are a diverse group here, but we all have one thing in common. We are out of the closet and urge everyone to come out of his or her closet as well. That means recognizing who you are, standing up for yourself and your rights, and being proud of who you are. We understand that this might not be possible due to age, job, or frame of mind, but remember, we are here especially for you. So kick back and relax and get ready for this week's edition of After Hours.
It's 2 a.m. on the East Coast, 11 p.m. on the West Coast. That means it's 1 a.m. here in the throbbing heart of the Montrose, and my fat ass is back where it belongs. This is After Hours, and if you didn't know it, it's Queer Radio with Attitude. My name, if you don't recognize my voice, is Chris Harrison. And next to me, it's the big faggy voice.
I'm Jimmy Carper. Hi.
Hi.
How you doing?
Wonderful.
I'm so glad you're back from your hyenas.
I heard about the hyenas. Wink, wink. This portion of the program brought to you by the American Youth. I knew I was going to screw up that word.
Hey, there we go.
What's
you should the American Euphemism Council?
Yes.
Euphemisms, use them.
How you been?
Well, I got a job now.
Hey,
I've got a real job. Well, so to speak, it's a paycheck.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Oh, graphic work in Tomball, Texas.
Oh, boy.
Yeehaw.
Okay, the queers have descended upon Tomball.
Yeah, beautiful downtown Tomball, Main and Plum. You get off Main, you're Plum out of town.
You gotcha.
Yeah. Wanted to take a moment before we went any further here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing, you know, in the 10 years I've been with this show...
God, 10 years.
At least 10 years.
I know.
I mean,
I know.
I was stumbling in here drunk when I was still living at my parents' house. I left my sandwich outside because Big Roy was in the room.
Gotcha.
You know, and during the time I've been here, I've tried to be honest and sincere with the listeners. Some people say too much of a degree. And I also like to entertain. And, you know, sometimes say things that are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a person that, even though back when Michelle Myers was here and she said, you know, if you make a mistake, you don't acknowledge it. I do. So a couple weeks ago, I did make a comment about someone that was wrong. And I have to apologize for it.
Okay.
And he's probably not listening, but I feel it has to be said. So to Ross Wilson at Hoover High School in Alabama, I said he was gay. And he's not.
Imagine that.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you know, you're in Alabama, you've got the bleach blonde hair, you're quarterback, so, you know, you're always looking at some guy's rear.
Yeah.
And they said he was still dating Aubrey. And to me, Aubrey is a good old Southern boy's name.
Well, of course
you know,
it is.
It's like Bubba, except you've got indoor plumbing and a dental plan.
Gotcha.
And apparently, some WASP family in Alabama named their daughter Aubrey. I know. Confusing.
Well, you know, there's Jordans and Tylers and, you know.
So it's one of those names that go both ways. So I have to, because I'm going to be the big man about it. And if I make a mistake and I say something wrong, I'm going to apologize. So apologize to Ross Wilson. Ross Wilson over in Alabama. And also to the listeners.
I'm sure he's sleeping better tonight for it.
I'll give him my address where he can well, he won't sleep much. Also, I want to say that one of the things I do with this show is I try and be professional, and I was also unprofessional and unethical that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't live up to the standards that I believe in what I should do with this show and what KPFT and Pacifica feels I should. And I'm sorry to the listeners that... my interjection and my commentary and led to what has happened. So try and be a little more professional, a little more ethical, at least until the police find out.
Well, you know, most people listening right now have no idea what you're
talking about, but
that's okay.
But that's the thing.
But the thing of it is, you and I make a good team because not only are we physically... kind of a Laurel and Hardy thing.
We're a perfect 10 together.
There you go.
If you people just draw the sizes there, you'll see the perfect 10.
Mm-hmm. And And I totally am conflict avoidance, and you just jump right into things. So I think we kind of even out.
Occasionally I get on a soapbox. Some people don't believe me. They believe I live on a soapbox when I'm on the show.
Yeah.
But,
no, well, you live in the soapbox when you're not on this show.
Yeah, and when I get on the show, it's very seldom that I do. You know, we don't have enough pledge of support to bring in the duty soapboxes.
And, you know, I'm here to maybe be the calming effect, and you're here because this show is after midnight and needs to be on the edge, and that's where you live. Anyway.
Is that good or bad?
That's very good. Now, before we get into our After Hours Quickie, which is Theater Suburbia, and the whole cast of the latest is sitting in our talk studio. Okay, maybe not the whole cast. I don't know.
I'm looking for, was it the lighting director? Where is he at? No, you changed them.
Oh, well. A couple of things I want to talk about because there's a lot of stuff going on tonight. You know, we're getting into the season. And so in the gay community, at least, I mean, there's stuff every weekend now until after Mardi Gras. So, stuff happening Sunday, November the 12th, 2006. Starting at 5 p.m. At the BRB is the Colt 45's Fall Harvest Festival. Please come out and support the Colt 45's and the community entertainers that make much of the work possible. See the show hosted by the Colt 45's and the Colt Entertainers of the Year, Rose Smith and Sarah Scholander, featuring a fabulous, of course, a showcase of community talent, light appetizers and prizes, and announcement of candidates for the Colt 45's BJ Summers Memorial Entertainer of the Year Award. And, of course, all proceeds to benefit the wonderful Colt 45's charities. Then, let's see, the Lip Synca Divas is happening from 8 to 10 p.m., Sunday night, and that's happening at George Country Bar at 617 Fairview, with regular cast members Shyla Michaels, Gia, and Ashley Houston performing, along with a special guest performer for November. Come on out and have a cocktail or two and enjoy the show. And also, for ICOH, the Imperial Court of Houston, the Space City Empire, they're having a Fall Into Tony's show at Tony's Corner Pocket over there where that used to be Keys West. So, all of that is going on in one day tomorrow. I don't know how you're going to spread yourself for that, so to speak.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, there's a hotel in the middle of there somewhere where you can spread yourself.
And then one more thing before we get into, we've got some other things that we'll talk about later, but for one more thing before we get into the Theater Suburbia group that I want to talk about Thanksgiving, and that there is many bars and organizations will be having Thanksgiving dinner. One in particular will be at Mary's, naturally. And this is being put on by Empress, a Gemini Empress for ICOH, Ginger Vitus. A lovely child. And she's just decided to put this on. It was originally going to be put on by Judy Reeves, but she recently had foot surgery and is now living on my sofa. And will be for the next 3 more weeks because she can't put any weight at all on one foot. So
she'll put all the other weight on your back.
So she's hobbling around. I've got a walker and a whip, and she's, doing her thing over
at my place. Sounds like a normal weekend at your house.
Yeah.
Only when Stanley's in town.
he comes in tomorrow night, too. So that'll be fun. Anyway, Thanksgiving at Mary's.
Again.
This is Come One, Come All to Eartha's Old Fashioned. Got you quaking in your boots because the food's a fill in your nostrils. Clean up to your blue hair. Thanksgiving dinner for all. Come to Pila, the debris on your China Bonet Capri plates. Add some nuts as tough as Chris Bodier's leather turkey and eat yourself into oblivion with all your community friends and neighbors. Now you might say, what in the hell did he just talk about? Well, this is in memorial to 4 people who have died this past year. Earthquake, Joel Eisenhower, also known as DePilot Debris, China Bonet Capri, and Chris Bodier. So, Judy put that all together. Ginger loved it. That's the theme.
Judy's doctor needs to check the meds.
Anyway.
Well, Judy's doctor should have checked her meds before the foot surgery, but that's another story.
Oh, God, there was checking of the meds. You don't even want to go into that story. Anyway, we do have Theater Suburbia folks with us tonight, Hello, Doris.
Hello, Jimmy.
Nice to see you again.
Good to see you. I see Judy's getting fair play. She took care of you, now you're having to take care
of her. Exactly, yeah. And it's really kind of fun having somebody there with me all the time. And it's really a lot less work than I thought it was going to be.
When do you get to smack her with the pillow?
No, it's great. You know, she's on the sofa. My sofa folds out. And, you know, she's got the TV in front of her, the phone next to her.
Hey. It's like the Hilton, but you don't leave a mint on her pillow.
She may not go. She may not go away. She may stay forever.
Oh, she'll go away. Yeah, you know. Once I start bringing tricks in, yeah, like that happens.
Yeah, anyway, you know,
your wildest dream.
The couch almost lines up with the front door, so you just need to get a couple of guys to give a good push, and she's out in the garden.
Well, I'm trying to get her to get that walker through to the bedroom so she can get on the computer, and you know, and then I don't have to worry about a thing. You know, she'll be entertained for hours.
There you go.
Yeah.
How many CDs and tapes did you have to shift to make room on the couch?
Careful. No, it was fine. I had everything. It's fine.
Keep saying it. Maybe you'll start to believe it.
So tell me about this new show.
Well, it's called Christmas in Her Heart by Walt Vail. It's a cute little Christmas show, mm-hmm. sort of heartwarming, about a lady who's bitter because her husband and divorced her and her daughter left 5 years ago. And she, all of a sudden, Christmas cards being mailed out with money in them and people showing up on her door to thank her for gifts.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got most of the cast here tonight, not all of them. But most of them, and we read two or three little pieces for you.
Yes,
it runs through December the 2nd,
mm-hmm.
Friday and Saturdays at 8:30.
I never understood that. Why your Christmas show ends so early?
Because we have to have our Phony Awards party the next weekend.
Oh.
We have to party sometime.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And then we have two Sunday matinees on the 19th and the 26th at mm-hmm. 3 p.m. And, of course, the 26th is my birthday, in case you want to send me a present or anything.
Or anything?
Yeah, uh-huh.
The 26th of what?
November.
Gotcha.
Uh-huh. Ticket prices are $12 for adults, $11 for seniors and students on Friday and Saturday, and $10 on Sunday for everybody.
Great.
And as usual, anybody that says they heard us on KPFT get a 2-for-1 offer. Buy one, get one free.
I love that offer.
And we're located at 1410 West 43rd. And the telephone number is 713-682-3525. We have 24-hour answering service.
Mm-hmm.
And the audience so far have loved it. It's a little hokey, but it brings
Christmas.
A tear or two.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. We've had a few tears at the end of it. I don't know if it's from the acting or they're really sincerely, moved.
A lot of beans being eaten.
Yeah. But anyway. But if you want, we can start around and let everybody introduce themselves.
You bet.
We've got our own techie here tonight that's going to provide some sound effects for us.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
He's my main man.
Gotcha. Who we got here, starting from my left?
Is that me over here?
You got it.
Okay, hi, I'm Suzanne Keene. I'm playing Marion in the show. I'm like the fun, Christmas-loving neighbor. It's so me.
Suzanne, you have been here many, many times.
Well, just a couple.
Yeah.
It just seems like I've been here a lot. That's it. That's me.
Okay.
Okay, I'm next, I guess. I'm Gene Griesbach, and I'm playing Ezra, who is the father of the main character, mm-hmm. Geraldine. Unfortunately, I'm dead, so I'm just a spirit.
Oh, he means in the show, not now.
Oh, stop me before I start.
We'll go on to the next person
after
that.
And hi, I'm Jerry Ann Cohen, and I play the mother, the ghostly mother of Geraldine, and I'm also dead.
Wow, a lot of dead people in this thing.
Only a couple.
Yeah.
Well, supposed to be.
I'm Catherine Collins, and I play Mrs. Gormley, the cleaning lady.
Itinerant.
Yeah.
Tony Darmada, I play Sam Blackburn, Geraldine's acquaintance.
Okay. Then we have our techie guy, huh?
Marcus Callahan. I do the tech, the lighting, and the sound.
Great.
I'm Liz Slavik. I play Mrs. Jeffries, and I'm a very positive influence on the cast.
Aww.
And the play.
My name's Andrew Hunt. I'm new to Houston, and this is my first production to be a part of here in town. Before I go any further, I'd like to say hi to all of my friends and family there at Super Happy Funland.
Oh, yes. Yay! We love that place. KPFD loves that place.
Well, they're sitting right there now listening to us on the radio and making a little tape of it, and so I can go home and listen to it.
Great.
I play George Pointer, the... Geraldine's divorced husband.
Mm-hmm. And who have we got there in the back?
Oh, that's Benny.
Benny, that's Liz's husband. He tagged along tonight.
Okay.
He's our moral supporter. He's seen the show several times.
Yes, well, Doris, I've known you a long time, and your morals could be supported, yes.
That's true. But he's married. Don't shh.
No, don't try to act like you have morals now.
Anyway, if you're ready, we'll read a couple of things for you.
You betcha.
Okay.
What in blazes? Where are we?
I don't know. I was bending over picking up one more rock when it occurred to me that our 5 years in purgatory were about up.
Look here. It's our house, ain't it?
Our house? Can't be. It's all run down.
And there at the writing desk. Isn't that Geraldine?
She's aged, if it is.
Oh, it's Geraldine. Geraldine, darling.
Hold on now. She can't hear you. Appears to be asleep. Her eyes are closed.
She's writing something. Her eyes can't be closed, but darned if they ain't shut tight. She's sleep writing.
Whatever that is. You don't suppose we're alive again, do you?
After 5 years in purgatory? Hell no.
Heavens no. Heavens no.
Sorry. Heavens no. But what are we doing back here? Shouldn't we be knocking on St. Peter's gate?
Something left unfinished, that's my guess.
I thought purgatory took care of all that.
Look at Geraldine, will you? Wonder what she's been up to in the 5 years since we died.
Wake her up and ask her.
Are you crazy? Wake her from a sound sleep to confront two old ghosts? You want her to die of a heart attack?
Well, no. What the devil?
What the angel? What the angel?
Sorry, what the angel?
It's a note from above. Read it. Out loud.
Oh. 1 year after your passing, Geraldine's husband George and daughter Christine left her. It was 2 weeks before Christmas. Your job, should you agree to take it, is to bring joy back into Geraldine's heart, for it was the two of you who were at the root of Geraldine's problem. If you succeed, you'll be transported to the gates of heaven. If you fail, 5 more years in purgatory. Good luck, St. Peter. Well, I'll be damned.
Saved? You'll be saved, will you? Watch your mouth.
Sorry, I'll be saved.
Bring joy back into Geraldine's heart. Now, how are we gonna do that?
You got me. I'm stumped.
Look over her shoulder. See what she's writing.
Christmas cards, season's greetings, and she's stuffing cash into each card.
Giving away money? I never taught her to do that.
You never did in your lifetime. Made me work my butt off while you stashed it away. Say, could that be the problem? We did teach her to take care of number one, didn't we?
Oh, we sure did. But I don't approve of giving away money. Get a job. That's my motto.
Always was. And then we ended up in purgatory.
I can't figure it out. Why?
St. Peter's trying to tell us something.
Like what?
Bring joy back into Geraldine's heart.
By helping her give away money? I'm danged if I'll do that.
Saved. You'll be saved if you do that. Watch your mouth.
I'm saved if I do that?
Or 5 more years moving stones.
I see. Okay, now what?
Look, she's finishing up.
Sealing the envelopes? Dang me! Save me. She put $100 into that one.
And $50 into that one. Okay, must be some greater power making her do that in her sleep.
St. Peter?
Who knows? She's doing something completely out of character. And we're gonna help her.
Looks like she's going back up to bed.
Okay. We had another little piece, and since Geraldine, our main character, isn't here, one of the other girls is going to read her part,
okay.
And I'm going to read their part.
Gotcha.
Okay. You get to hear me on air.
Hey,
trying to act.
Hey.
It's a miracle. The whole world? You owned one frying pan, two dishes from the discount store, and one coffee cup shared between us. And I expected much more from you, George.
And you got much more when your parents left you everything. But for 15 years, we were happy.
You were happy. I was waiting to be happy. I'm still waiting.
Those Christmases we spent together in our little house, before we moved into your parents' big one, you used to decorate such a beautiful Christmas tree.
With popcorn and paper ornaments. Wore out my fingers stringing that popcorn because you couldn't afford...
Oh, I do that. Popcorn is wonderful on a Christmas tree.
I use cranberries. Long strings of cranberries. Such color.
What happened, George, to Christine and Robert Bradford?
Yes, well, I was getting to that. When I got your Christmas card...
I didn't send one.
But I received one. And I know how isolated you've been over the years. How you've refused any contact. How you didn't respond to the wedding invitation.
Which I didn't get.
So you tell me. Well, I felt terrible when I got this card. If we can't be husband and wife, let's at least be friends. Well, I cried, Jerry. Because I realized how cruel and miserable I've been to you. Here you are, apparently in your own handwriting, saying let's be friends. And I haven't bothered to tell you. I mean, I could have... called you or written to you about how happy Christine was and how she had a child and about the tragedy she suffered.
Tragedy?
Yes. Her husband Robert was killed in an automobile accident on the way to work one morning about 3 months after the child was born. She had to bury her husband with a tiny baby in her arms, and she loved Robert very much.
Oh, how dreadful.
How terrible.
How sad.
I'm sorry, George. Very sorry, Geraldine.
I guess you should have called me.
Well, I wanted to, but...
You could have been there to help with the baby.
Well, I went up to Boston and did what I could. Christine was very brave. All that happiness shattered in a moment. A knock at the door and a policeman brought the news to her, alone with the child. I went up and helped with the arrangements, but you should have been there and it's my fault you weren't. Christine asked me, shouldn't we call you? And I said no. You were too bitter, wanted nothing to do with us. That was very selfish of me, Geraldine, and I apologize. I'm very sorry.
Don't apologize. It's too late for that.
Well, Christine needs our help. Robert's insurance money wasn't very much. She has no job, no income, and a 6-month-old child. I've asked her to come home, but she clings to that little apartment and her moments of happiness with Robert. She needs her mother. See, that's the worst thing that's happened to her before this. Losing you when we divorced. She needs to hear from you.
Geraldine, you can invite her up for a Christmas visit.
A wonderful idea. She could come down for a week or a month and bring the grandchild.
And at Christmas time. What a grand Christmas that would be. And you deserve it, Mrs. Poynter. You've been so generous with all of us.
She'll be sad without her husband at Christmas. You can't let her spend Christmas alone.
Up in that cold town with the beans.
You've got to do it, Geraldine.
But she hasn't contacted me in 5 years.
She tried. Sent you a wedding invitation.
Let her send me another one if she wants to see me. Let her send me a Christmas card.
Well, there's one more thing I haven't told you, Jerry.
Don't tell me any more.
I must. The little girl, your grandchild, little Geraldine. See, Christine has named her after you.
Well, now.
Well, how about that?
Well, that's interesting.
Well, I think it's significant.
Well, Geraldine,
what do you think?
She should never have married that guy, George.
The question is, have we brought joy back into Geraldine's heart?
Doesn't appear so.
We'll have to keep trying, then.
We've got a great-grandchild. Did you know that?
No, they don't have email in purgatory.
She's a little girl. Christine should have named her after me.
Maggie's a little out of style, don't you think?
It's a grand old name, Maggie.
For a witch, maybe.
Ezra Fink.
Oh, I didn't mean it. Let's not get all upset over the name of your great-granddaughter. Let's concentrate. Bring joy back into Geraldine's heart.
Okay, let's materialize and scare the bejesus out of the lot of them.
No, she's not ready. The right moment is when she's alone. After she gets the card she sent us.
So where in blazes? Heavens, is that card? The others were delivered.
Christmas mail rush. It'll get here.
Meanwhile?
Meanwhile, Geraldine needs a shove, I think.
Okay, I'll do it.
Not like that. Like this.
Okay. And now that's a little heavy, so yeah. We've got one more little scene where we lighten it up a little bit.
An alligator?
For Christmas?
Well, he's been watching a lot of television, and his favorite program is Animal Planet. He was going to make a boa constrictor, but he put legs on it and ended up with an alligator.
Mrs. Pointer will love it.
Of course she will. Won't she?
Oh, I hope so. Little Richie hated to part with it, but he so wanted to bring some joy into Mrs. Pointer's life.
An alligator will surely do that. Just put it under the tree.
Oh, look, there's already two gifts there. One from you, Mrs. Gormley.
You've got that right. That one's mine.
What did you get her?
Something I know she'd like. She's been using that awful cake soap to do her dishes, and it's not healthy. It doesn't cut the grease.
It doesn't? Well, that's what I use.
Mrs. Jeffries, tell me you don't do that.
I just told you I do.
Well, let me look at your hands. Oh, heavens, all red and raw, just like it says on television.
Well, I'm sorry. I use hand cream, but...
It's the soap, Mrs. Jeffries. It's a wonder you have any fingers left.
Oh, it's not that bad.
It's worse. Please tell me you'll switch to Super Ultra Sunrise.
Is that what you've given Mrs. Pointer for Christmas?
The giant-sized bottle. And when she uses it, she'll see. It cuts grease, and it's mild on the hands. And it has something special in it. It's biodegradable, and it contains no phosphates. And I love the lemony smell.
Well, what does that mean, biodegradable?
Well, it means you can't get a bad grade from using it. You know, like in biology in school.
Oh, I never took biology. I couldn't bear to cut up a frog.
Or an alligator.
Never an alligator. But I saw an old movie on TV where Tarzan cut open an alligator's stomach while wrestling with the alligator.
Well, anyway, the other gift is mine.
Oh, well, what did you give her?
A gift certificate for a body massage.
What a great idea. Oh, wow.
She's much too tense. She needs to relax and loosen up a bit.
That will do it.
Maybe that's what I need. I've never had a body massage.
Oh, God, it's heavenly. You're a new woman after one of those.
Well, who does it? One of those big hugs? Or one of those French men?
Oh, not a man, Mrs. Jeffries.
It's usually a woman. A well-muscled woman.
A woman? Well, that must be something else. I've never had a woman touch my body. Is that really legal?
Oh, it's legal. And very pleasant.
Do you have to take your clothes off?
Oh, what a question.
Not all of them.
I couldn't do it. Do you think Mrs. Pointer will really enjoy it?
Well, if she can't use it, she can always give the certificate to me for next Christmas.
Anybody home? Where's Geraldine?
Come in, Mr. Washburn.
Blackburn, Sam Blackburn. Well, look at this, a Hanukkah bush.
It's a Christmas tree.
For me, it's a Hanukkah bush. Does Geraldine
It's
know
a surprise.
A happy surprise, we hope.
Uh-oh, is Geraldine fond of surprises? I don't think so.
She'll like this one.
We're hoping for a Christmas miracle.
Oh, me too. That's why we leave the door open at Seder.
Huh?
Never mind. Well, where do I put my present? Under the bush?
Well, what's in it?
A surprise, Mrs. Jeffries. You have a surprise, I have a surprise.
We can keep a secret.
No, it's a surprise for all of you, but mostly for Geraldine. So, where is she?
Her weekly shopping trip.
Christmas shopping? Geraldine?
Oh, food shopping. We expect her home any minute.
You don't... She doesn't know you put up the bush?
She lets me keep a key to the house for emergencies. This is an emergency. A Christmas emergency.
Maybe I should leave my present and go.
Oh, no, you're in this with us now.
Don't you want to see her face when she sees the tree and all her decorations?
I don't think so.
Stay, Mr. Whiteburn. Sit.
Blackburn, stand.
Relax, Mr. Blackburn. Everything will be fine. I hear her car in the driveway now.
It's her, all right. Everyone, remain calm.
Oh, maybe I should help her with the groceries.
No. Stand right over there. Now, everybody face the door. Hey, Mrs. Gormley, keep your hand on the tree light switch. Now give her time to come in, and then we'll all say softly, "Surprise! Merry Christmas!" And then, Mrs. Gormley, you switch on the tree light.
Maybe we could sing Silent Night.
No. Save that for later. Yeah, we don't want to overwhelm her.
I'll say Happy Hanukkah.
Whatever. Now, be quiet. She's on the steps. That's it.
Oh. No, surprise.
Surprise!
Happy Hanukkah!
Let's not forget Kwanzaa.
Anyway, they've had fun. We've had fun. We've got some new people in the show this time.
Yes, and I see some new faces.
New faces. And
I kind of gave it that little gay twist for tonight.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
She does that most nights, though.
I know. So next question. When do you come to see the show?
Soon.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't wait until the last weekend because, you know, that's Dickens on
nearly Christmas.
Well, you got three more.
So I've got two more. Only two more?
Yeah.
Next weekend.
Eight shows left.
Yeah, but there can't
he
come
can't
the last
come
weekend.
To the last
so.
One.
Oh. No.
So that's six shows. You have six opportunities. That's
okay. Right. Okay, so when are they again?
Okay, runs through December the 2nd.
Yes, I know. Friday and Saturday,
8:30. And we have two Sunday matinees on the 19th and the 26th at 3 p.m.
Okay.
713-682-3525.
Or Theatra Suburbia.
Yeah, and all Northwest Houston's oldest all-volunteer.
Theater.
Or whatever.
Anyway. And always on the World Wide Web at dubcubed.theatrasuburbia.org, right?
No, I think it's .com.
.com. You're a .com, huh?
I don't know. Ask Delvin. You know, he's hanging out there with you out there. Not with the rest of us.
It's .com.
But he isn't listening. Oh, it is .com, yes.
Yeah.
He was listening. Great.
And then in January, we open with another show called Dragnet.
Oh.
It's a takeoff on the old Jack
Webb. Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, but that's, that's going to be fun. Yeah.
Just the facts, ma'am.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Two for one if you call and say.
So you've heard us on KPFT.
Which I mention every week, so. Someday somebody will do that.
Oh, we've had a few.
Have you?
We've had a couple of people come.
Good.
Or just say that they heard it. They didn't, ask for anything free, but a few of them.
Okay. Well, thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having
us. I always enjoy the troupe coming in and doing stuff from the new play.
Well, we enjoy it. We appreciate you doing it for us.
Thank you. See you next time.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much.
You bet. Bye. Okay, now some music, and Diane Rose, I believe, is waiting in the wings, right? Chris?
Well, she ain't on the back patio.
Okay, she's waiting on the back patio.
There she is.
Here's a little music just for her, and we'll be right back.
Inside of a bar room, or listen to a jukebox all night long. But I see these are the things that bring you pleasure. So I'm gonna make some changes in our home. I've heard it said that if you can't beat 'em, join 'em. So if that's the way you wanted me to be, I'll change if it takes that to make you happy. From now on, you're gonna see a different me. Because you're a good girl, he's gonna go bad. I'm gonna be the swingin'est swinger that you've ever had. If you like them painted up, powdered up, then you ought to be glad, because you're good girly girl. The taste of whiskey. In fact, you'll hardly recognize your wife. I'll buy some brand new clothes. I'll dress up fancy for my journey to the wilder side of life. Because you're a good girl, he's gonna go bad. I'm gonna be the swingin'est swinger that you've ever had.
you're not on yet.
You're not on yet, honey. Sorry. Because we got to do a little pitch here. But what, first, I want to talk about the music. That was Suzanne Cartolur.
No, that one. Was this one.
Yeah. Who was that?
Ginger Comes to Stay.
Oh, Mary Lofstrom. Mary Lofstrom, a lesbian jazz performer who is not with us anymore, damn it. We lost her about a year or so ago, but she's got this great, great album out, and that was her jazz version of Your Good Girl's Gonna Go Bad. And we started off the show with relatively new music. Hello.
I'm laughing at the fact that the lesbian artist, her music is on Shimmering Fish Belly Records.
He went there.
I just read, you know, hey, like I said, I saw something, I read it.
Yes.
I call it like I see it, and it's Shimmering Fish Belly music. Ginger Comes to Stay. I don't know what we played at the beginning. That CD's gone, isn't it?
Darren.
Darren? What's over here?
The Limit.
I don't know what song we played. He's eating a rose.
Cut number one.
The Limit.
The Limit. Darren. Good.
He's eating a rose on the back.
And people are not calling 713-526-5738.
Pledge because I'm back.
Yes, please.
Piss off the man. Vote for me. With yes. Your pledge of support.
Yes, this is fun drive. I know a lot of other shows really hit you over the head with it, and spend their whole show talking about it. And I know that I don't like to listen to that. So what we try to do here is bring you an after-hours show, and we just kind of edge it in. And we figure if we give you, you know, tell you about it for about 30 seconds to a minute, give you time to call in, that we don't have to interrupt the show unless you don't call in. And then, you know, as we get into the show, then we get really desperate and pissed and start crying.
And we have to go all Channel 8 on your ass and spend, you know,
yeah,
and spend 50 minutes of every hour telling you what to pledge for. And
yeah, and we don't want to do that.
What gifts we'll give you.
We do not want to do that because
that's not
Diane Rose is waiting in the wing.
Oh, hold on. I got to turn on her mic if she wants to talk.
She is all happy about it.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, so 713-526-5738. And then, you know, once we shut up, we'll let Diane talk until the top of the hour. And then I've got to play something.
Yeah.
Thought they'd never be quiet.
I know. Go ahead, you.
Guess who I have tonight? Carol Wyatt. That's right.
Whoa.
The one and only.
Stop.
Carol Wyatt. And she's got some exciting news tonight. She's working on a project that I think we'll all be happy about. She's going to tell us all about it. Carol?
Are we ready?
We're ready to go, girl.
Because I was riveted about the shimmering fish belly thing. Yeah. I don't really have anything that can top that.
It's hard to come back on a fish belly.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's set the bar high. It's true. Well, as you probably know, I'm involved with Pride Houston, and we are in the middle of a six-month project to reevaluate what we do for our future, how we grow, how we get bigger, how we get better. And
how we get integrated.
Thank you. Yeah, how we offer activities and festivities that are of interest to everybody in the community. And we're looking very strongly at moving both the parade and festival downtown.
That would be great.
I think so.
Oh,
not everybody does. Well, you know, I understand that there's a lot of passion around the idea that Montrose is our historic and spiritual home. But, you know,
Houston is our home.
Thank you. A lot of us don't live in Montrose anymore. And I think doing a festival downtown would make a very strong statement that we are part of the fabric of this city, that
That's
we're
right.
not marginalized, we're not going to be ghettoized. That's not really our lead reason for doing it. We need a park-like, pretty setting. We need a bigger footprint to be able to do more things. That's what's really driving it.
Yeah.
But it certainly would make a nice political statement. Let's say, you know, during the festival, maybe we have a mass commitment ceremony on the steps of City Hall
cool.
around 3 o'clock. We raise the gay flag over City Hall. It'd be kind of fun.
Definitely. Also, you can
Cause
see the parade
garden guy to blow
there.
An eyeball, wouldn't
I'm
it?
I'm telling you, I can't believe that garden guy.
Ugh.
Oh. Did you see the thing? It was on national news, actually,
yeah.
The garden guy.
Yeah, I actually was interviewed for an article in the L.A. Times last week.
Really?
Yeah.
About the garden guy?
Yeah.
Man, boy, did his wife didn't know
what she was getting into.
What a dumb.
You know, and funny thing, that Dallas and Austin have ordinances in place that you can't say, I'm not going to do business with you because you're gay. Why doesn't Houston have that?
Well, you know, it's not... Granted, it wasn't against the law, but it certainly was against common sense and decency. Yep. And think about this. I was appalled that she felt like it was socially acceptable to say that out loud. I mean,
Put it in writing.
Yeah, can you imagine her writing and saying, sorry, but we choose not to do business with Negroes.
Exactly.
Nobody would think that's socially acceptable anymore, even though she might harbor that prejudice inside, right?
Right. Unbelievable. I mean, this is 2006. I bet their business is slacked off.
One can only hope. Of course, the Wingnuts have probably flocked. I got a letter from a gay couple down in Westbury, and they said, oh, my God, we just spent like $10,000 with these people. We had no idea that
and
this
obviously
was going.
They didn't either.
Oh, they were so upset. So they have they messaged the Westbury Civic Association to request that they take the Garden Guys advertisements off their civic website and stuff.
Good for them. And I hope they let the Garden Guy know that he's already done business with gay people.
Well, I think we probably crashed the Garden Guy's website. So
it was almost shut down. I forget how many thousands of hits it had.
I believe that was God smiting them.
Yep.
God smites in mysterious ways, apparently.
Yes, God does. But, you know, it's a sad thing. You know, these people probably... They're not bad people. I don't believe they're bad people. I think they were misinformed by their church, is what I think.
Yeah. Well, you know, they believe that we're just hideously evil.
Right, because they listen... to their minister or preacher, who I don't even know what religion they are, but they're being fed some bad information.
I'm
going
to just jump on the ledge and say probably some form of evangelical.
Well,
Christian.
You know, you're stepping out there. That's a real,
I know. I don't think they're Unitarian. I'm just
probably
saying.
Probably not.
Yeah.
But it's sad that we still have clergy this day and age teaching that type of hate.
Well, speaking about clergy, let's talk about Ted Haggard.
That's something.
Yeah, another God smiting.
Definitely.
Yeah, of course. This is the former head of a mega church in Colorado, the president of some evangelical
association. It's like 14,000 members in his church.
Claimed to be on a phone conference with George W. Bush every week. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Got outed for being gay and snorting crystal meth while he was having gay sex.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
What's this world coming to? You know, and stuff like that, it makes us look bad, too, because here he is with a prostitute, first of all, doing drugs, second of all, and now all of a sudden they don't think all preachers are gay. They think all gay people do drugs.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the bad part to me wasn't that he was gay. It was that he was cheating around on his wife.
Exactly.
God only knows what she's got now.
And worse than that, he was being hypocritical to his following.
Oh, and it's come out today that several of the other leaders in the evangelical world knew that he was gay, and they weren't doing anything about
kidding.
It. Yeah, so that just came out today. So it's sort
that.
Of like the Mark Foley. It's all coming back to the, who was the, in the Catholic Church scandal with the priest, the Cardinal up in Boston, Cardinal Law?
Bernard Law.
Bernard Law. So he was like he has become the stereotype of all enablers. And so we've got Denny Hastert in the house now enabling Mark Foley. We've got
Lordy.
The other. Yeah. Hypocrisy is it's a bitch.
It is. It is. At least, you know, we tell you who we are. There's no second guessing who I am. I'm walking the door. They know who I am. I don't.
Big old honking lesbian. Right there. Big
That's
old
right.
sign.
Here I am. Hey.
Yep.
Hey, you guys out there. We need some call-ins tonight. Let us know what you think about the parade moving down. I think it's a great idea. Call 713-526-5738. And also, why don't you make a pledge for us tonight?
Yeah, we can't take calls on the air tonight.
Why?
Because we're doing the Pledge Central.
Well, don't they have to call in to pledge?
Yeah, but I can't put them on air.
Oh.
Well, while you're giving money, be sure and give an earful to the guy who's taking your credit card.
So you can give money, you just can't talk. I see.
Well, they'll give you a little. They can pass the message along. That's the way the phones are set up. We can only do it one way or the other.
Oh.
See, if you gave enough money, we could fix the phone so that we could take money and take calls.
If we had money, we could have a new phone system with more than one line.
The Dixie Cups weren't out, so give money. I'm just saying. All right, well, that was our whole show because we were planning on filling it with call-ins. So what are we going to talk about now? Oh, boy, are we SOL.
Let's see. Well, I would say what y'all want to talk about, but you can't tell me.
Yeah. Try to beam that to us. You know, actually, we had a historic election this week, so we can talk
about
that.
Finally, we've got the majority.
Yeah. Let me just, I actually made some interesting statistics of just to sort of help give you the historic significance of this week. First of all, of course, now Nancy Pelosi is the leader of the House.
Yep.
And
she's the first woman to ever do that, right?
That makes her third in line for the presidency. Ooh. That is the highest that any woman in this country has ever been. And when Georgie delivers his State of the Union address in January, old Nancy's going to be sitting right behind him.
Wow.
And you got to love that. Also, we took 24 of the 33 Senate seats. And remember, the Senate only a third of the Senate is up for re-election at any given time. So we could have taken much more than that had there been...
next time.
Yeah, next time. We got 7 million more votes than the Republicans, which means totally. House and Senate. 7 million more votes. That represents two times the winning percentage that George Bush got last time when he claimed that he had a mandate to go out. I got some political capital, and I'm going to spend it.
Yep.
Let's see. Oh, this is a significant one, too. Republicans did not pick up a single seat in the House or Senate. Democrats won a lot of them. Republicans didn't. They got bupkis, and that's never happened in the history of any election.
Why
in
do
this
you think
country.
That is, Carol?
I think because George Bush was a giant, enormous boat anchor.
Absolutely.
Sinking them all. And they were all enablers for this stupid war, and they deserve what they got.
Yep.
Not that the Democrats weren't helping them, too. But
so do you think this is going to get us out of there?
Well, it's really tough because we have a thin majority in the Senate, razor thin. We have a pretty good majority in the House, but of course, Bush can still veto.
Right.
We don't have enough of a majority to override a veto. And even if we pass a bill, George is still doing those, and I call him George, he's still doing those stupid signing statements, which every law that's passed, he just basically says, I'm
going to
do whatever the hell I want. So, yeah, there's some issues there. And he's already shown that he's going to continue to be a giant dick. He gets Pelosi in for a meeting claiming to be all conciliatory, never once called her Madam Speaker-elect, just called her the Congresswoman, so he didn't show her any respect. Then they immediately, 30 minutes after her meeting, resent up the John Bolton nomination for United Nations again, which has been slapped down multiple times. That was a slap, and now he's trying to get the wiretapping bill passed before the end of December, and they've pretty well let him know that ain't happening either.
Uh-uh.
When ducks sing mammy, that one's going to happen.
Absolutely. I can't even believe he even considered that.
Well, he's trying to cover his ass because what he's doing is against the law.
Yep.
And, Rumsfeld being charges are being brought against Rumsfeld in Germany for war crimes.
Really?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
I just don't think he should travel anytime soon. It's not like they can come get him. But
why in Germany? What's going on there?
And you know, if Germany's accusing you of war crimes, well, you know you're in bad shape.
Big time.
I don't know. There's something about their laws there that made it more likely that they could actually bring the charges to stick. I don't know a lot of
who
details.
Initiated it?
They. I just don't know.
They.
Sorry.
It's okay. They.
Yeah.
Under German law, there's a German law that states that any German citizen can bring charges of war crimes against any citizen in any country wherever it occurred. They've been talking about bringing charges against members of the Israeli government for crimes against Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
So someone has filed a complaint against Rumsfeld, Alberto Gonzalez, and...
Or Abu Gonzalez, as we call him, for his crimes.
Well, it's about Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo. Gonzalez, Rumsfeld, and there's one other.
There is one more. Who is it? It's not Cheney, is it? Oh, well.
No,
you know,
not,
if we were on in the daytime, we'd have our facts together, but really, it's 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, only so many brain cells can work this early.
Yeah. you'll take what we give you and
since
we'll love it. You'll love it.
Since that time, I do need to play this real quick, and then we can get back
to the show.
Well,
we missed one fact.
Your vote matters most. Now here's a word for one of our candidates.
I am Susan Young, candidate for the KPFT Local Station Board. I have served on the KPFT board for the last 3 years, two as chair. I have been active on many committees, and I played a significant role in securing grants for strategic planning and a music series at Miller Outdoor Theater. I believe the board's job is to create a vision, establish policy, and form partnerships, not micromanagement or rules for rules' sake. I have work and academic experience in nonprofit management, finance, city planning, and the performing and visual arts. KPFT is my link to the truth and the blues, to diverse communities and points of view, and to a family of people who share my fears and hope for the planet. Please vote for me, Susan Young, and please vote in this board election. It's important.
This is 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
Okay, we're back. The third person was George Tenet.
George Tenet.
Oh, that Medal of Freedom guy. Hey, oh, do you suppose Rumsfeld's going to get a Medal of Freedom now?
You think?
Yeah, well, duh. He's doing a heck of a job.
Heck of a job.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, you know, the guy they've nominated to replace him is way tied up in the Iran-Contra scandal.
Oh, you're kidding
me. No. Totally. Was the emissary that Reagan used to arrange with the Iranians to hold the hostages until he could be elected so that he could release them on the first day.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, he's there's so many of those Iran-Contra people that are coming back. And of course, the overriding theme here is George W. has botched yet another thing in his life, and his daddy's minions are running to bail his ass out.
Unbelievable.
It's got to feel kind of bad. I hope it does.
You know, what kills me is his timing, okay?
How so?
Well,
was there ever a good time to be a despot?
This Rumsfeld thing has been boiling for how many months?
Oh, yeah. Okay? He says, if you were the parent of a soldier who was killed in the last couple of days, wouldn't you... Well, you'd probably be unhappy anyway, but wouldn't you be extra pissed if you...
Extra.
Yeah. So he said that he didn't want it to unduly influence the outcome of the election.
Oh, I see.
So we're playing politics with the war.
Yeah. I see.
Yeah.
How about those pledges out there? We would love to...
Bring it back so I got the name right. I forgot about the name. We do have a pledge to thank.
Oh, we do? Good. Thank you so much.
Johnny... with a very generous pledge, and he's a virgin.
Like a virgin.
Did he have an opinion about the parade moving?
No, it doesn't say, but...
He wasn't allowed to speak.
Must have been a small pledge.
No, it's not.
Johnny, call back, Johnny. Yeah. Tell us what you think.
But
Was in the
thank
actual
you,
double
we
digits, Johnny.
That.
Thank you.
You should feel good about yourself.
We love you.
Definitely.
Yes, it was... very substantial.
Now
pleasure.
Maybe we can get another phone line.
Yeah. One could hope.
But, I mean...
Or a second Dixie cup. Either one.
Or maybe a daytime show.
Oh, could be.
I don't know. You know, I can't get past this nighttime thing. You know, I listen to KPFT during the day, and there's lots of good music on. It looks like they would take an hour and talk about something.
And perhaps have us talk about it.
Maybe.
It's called Open Journal. It's on from noon to 1.
Uh-huh.
And you can put in for a show at that point. And it's open and you can speak your mind on any number of topics have done in the past.
I did not know that.
There you have it.
So it's called Open Journal. And you just call the radio station and you say, I want to come on and talk about X topic.
There's forms out there in the lobby. You fill it in. And if management approves your topic of discussion on the Open Journal... it's pretty much free reign what you want to say.
Wow. So any of our listeners out there that have something to say, get a form. Come down to KPFT.
Well, wait a minute.
Forms.
Wait a minute. We want the daytime slot. Y'all can have our 1:30 slot. We'll take the daytime slot. You gotta pay your dues for a while.
But that's good to know. I had no idea. So we are free speech. Definitely.
There you have it.
I mean, you got an opinion about something? Come tell us. Get on the radio. Tell Houston about it.
Tell us how you feel about the parade movement. Just throwing out an idea.
Because you can't get a phone line. You have to come on the air to say it.
Well, if you make a pledge, you could.
Well, I don't know.
We cannot put them on the air.
They have to.
No, we know.
We know that, definitely. They can only call in to make a pledge.
Right. Glad we got that cleared up.
Well, Carol, I'm so glad that you're doing all this work on the parade. I, for one, I think it's too hot during July to have the parade. I know that's our anniversary and everything, but couldn't we do it another month?
Yeah, there's actually, there's two components to thinking about this move. There's finding a venue that will allow us to grow and expand, finding a venue that is, you know, our festival, we have to block off side streets, and you try holding a quality festival on pavement in June in Houston, it's really tough. So that's one issue, and then the issue of time of year is also just crippling for us. Not only is it very uncomfortable for you as viewers, it's very hard for us to get enough volunteers to participate that day because it's just, it's unbelievable. I haven't seen the parade in the last 2 years.
Have you been in it?
No, I've been sick behind the stands. I've been working all day in the heat, and I get done with my official duties and just have to go put my head in a bucket of ice afterwards. So it's and we can't get good vendors. This is sort of an unexpected
thing.
Well,
there's no place to put them.
Well, we have some space at the festival now, but the vendors tell us it's too hot, people won't eat, so we're not going to, our employees don't want to work in that heat. So we really struggle with those issues. And the overall overriding factor here is we want to produce a fabulous set of festivities for Houston, and we believe that changing venues will allow us to do so much more for you than we've been able to do before.
Oh, definitely. At least you could see the parade. There's a lot more viewing points than standing 20 people deep on Westheimer.
Yeah, yeah. And we're thinking about doing some interesting things where instead of just having the traditional linear parade like everybody on the planet does, sort of, I'm going to do a radio visualization.
Okay,
all right?
Let's hear it.
All right, so let's imagine we're in the Goodyear blimp. We're hovering over the downtown area, and we're looking at the City Hall reflecting pool area, Tranquility Park to one side, and the library pavilion to the other side. So that makes a big rectangle, and I'm drawing it for you, for those of you at home, with my fingers. And so the parade perimeter, the parade route would be the rectangle that goes along the outside of all three of those blocks. Instead of just starting at one point and taking an hour and a half to get to some people in the parade, we would have four simultaneous starting points at each of the corners of that rectangle, and at the stroke of the start of the parade, all four segments would enter the parade route at the same time and move clockwise or counterclockwise, that's open for debate, but they'd all move in the same direction, so that immediately the parade route would be filled and everybody would have
something.
So you
could see the parade immediately rather than waiting an hour and a half for the first slope to get to you.
Going to move much faster. It's going to be much more efficient. We'd love to do fireworks at the end. We can't do fireworks in Montrose. We actually tried it maybe 5 years ago, and because we're in the residential area, there were restrictions about how high you could launch them, and so they had to be very short, and unless you were right in that block, you just couldn't see them.
Yeah.
But downtown, we can blast them way off. We can do fun things like project images up on those big buildings that face City Hall.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, just do.
And probably, I would imagine, with that setup, you could have a lot more vendors.
Yeah, lots more. We're trying to make it more than just food and drink and stuff to buy. We want to do interactive stuff. For example, we always have an area where our nonprofit organizations can tell you about themselves and hand out brochures. Well, it's pretty boring.
It's hard to talk. I volunteered 1 year for HRC to do that very thing, and because of the crowds coming by, getting somebody's attention was something else, but then even trying to have them hear you and scream to what the organization was about, it was impossible.
Yeah. So what we think we're going to do for that area is to create like a country fair competition area, you know, things like ring toss games and knock the bottles over, the things that you would normally, you know, pay four tickets, whatever, to do. So let's pick a sister's. So instead of just having a booth and handing out brochures, it's going to be the sister's ring toss booth, and they'll have their signage up. Their people will staff that booth. We'll arrange the whole thing, but they'll staff it. And when you come by to to compete in that game. They can talk to you about what they do for the community, but it's just more entertaining than just having a booth out there.
Yeah.
We want to have some interactive games. Families are an increasingly important part of the fabric of our community.
Yes, they are.
So we'll have a family activity area. We're going to have multiple stages with lots of different varieties of music to be of interest to many elements of our community. But we'll do things like fashion shows. We'll work with the theaters to do performances. Just a lot more that we can do.
And then with that setup, you can move around, too, rather than just staying in the same spot for 5 hours.
And you're on grass and trees and a little prettier.
And food available.
Yeah, food. And, oh, sorry, I guess that hurt. For those of you who are deafened at home.
I definitely like that idea. I think it's something definitely should move forward.
Well, I hope the message that everybody hears is we don't really have any hidden agenda in doing this. We're simply doing it because we want to be the best we can be to offer our community the best festivities that we can. And, frankly, it's a lot more work for us.
Oh, I bet.
But,
I mean, aren't there a bunch of permits that y'all have to go through and everything?
You know, this is one of the coolest things that's happened. As we've opened up exploration of this idea, and we've been exploring it for 6 months now, resources have become available to us that we never would have expected. There is a city department that plans these kinds of downtown kinds of events.
I didn't know that.
And it's run by a wonderful woman named Susan Christian, and they will assign an event planner for you to help you with everything from negotiating the best prices for floats to working with all the different vendors. Just lots of resources. We went and talked to the International Festival and the Bayou City Art Festival just to learn from them. They have both said, come in, we'll help you anytime to share our trade secrets with you to help you be as good as you can be. I always get this wrong. Greater Houston Convention Center and Visitors Bureau, who is aching for a new and shorter name, if you ask me.
I think they use the acronym.
Whatever. We've never been able to get any of their attention before because they are measured by by hotel occupancy.
Yep.
We just didn't offer anything that was really putting a lot of fannies in hotel rooms, right? But we've gone and visited with them, and they are so excited about helping us out. They said they'll negotiate with the downtown hoteliers to get us good rates and help us get a little kickback to help offset some costs and help promote it for us. So it's really amazing. If you just open your arms and are open to new ideas and ask for help, lots of good things are coming in.
Well, that's great. We would have never
Let me get off my little soapbox.
We would have never had that kind of resource if we stayed in Montrose.
Yeah, it just, you know, we were classifying ourselves as a little ghetto operation.
Not that Montrose is a ghetto, but we're kind of locked in down here, and we're all part of the city, not just part of Montrose. I don't even live in Montrose.
Yeah, there are so many of us are from other places. And before everybody calls in to make pledges and is yelling at the pledge people about the changes, let me hasten to add that we understand the emotional attachment to Montrose.
The West Nymer Art Festival went through this same
thing. What a mess! Yeah, we understand the attachment to the June time of year, but you know what? Think about this. If those transvestites had rioted at Stonewall in January of the year, do you think Chicago would be trying to have their gay pride festival and parade in January? You know, the weather just wouldn't allow them right?
Uh-uh.
And our weather is almost that severe in the same sort of way. And if we move it to a different time of the year, then everybody else who has their festivities in June can come visit us.
Absolutely.
At a different time of year.
And as it stands now, we have to stagger between the cities so you can go to Dallas and then go to Austin and then come to Houston.
Well, you know, Dallas moved to September already several years ago. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So there's lots of precedents for cities holding it at times other than June.
Did they do that because of the heat?
Yes. That's from what I understand. Sydney holds theirs in February. San Diego historically was in June, but that's their rainiest month of the year, and they kept getting rained out, so they finally had to just give up and move it to July. So there are, I could go on, but there are more examples.
Well, you know, we should have every month, not just one month.
Don't you think?
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a historic event, but we can still celebrate that day.
Yeah.
and still celebrate the rest of the year, too. We shouldn't be locked into one day or one month.
You know, Pride's mission statement says that we are charged with commemorating, celebrating, and educating about Pride. And this will be our 29th year. We've been trying to tell people the story of Stonewall and what all happened. And unfortunately, the young kids just don't get it. They don't have any attachment to it. And I don't know what we can do to make that any different. But, you know, to be able to move to a different time of year to get bigger crowds so that we have a larger opportunity to deliver that message, I think would be good. Okay. I think people don't get it because they're having heat stroke. It's just an idea.
And tell me this, would you still have the parade at nighttime or the daytime?
Yeah, you know, we're pretty attached to the nighttime deal because we were the first nighttime parade in North America. Oh. We thought that was pretty cool.
Definitely.
Yeah, and it's a little hook for us. Now, let me tell you some things that we've gotten some complaints, and I think they are fairly rendered, that the parade is too long.
Amen.
And it's too boring. So we hear strongly from the community that organizations ought to be able to be in the parade if they want to be in the parade, but we need to do a better job of helping them figure out how to make their entries entertaining. Five lesbians in unmatching outfits walking behind a truck is not really a visually entertaining entry, you know?
Well, and I think it's going to move faster because of everybody coming in at different entrance points.
Yeah, that'll help.
I mean, that alone.
Yeah. But we're going to do some things. Like this year, we're going to have some volunteer choreographers and designers on our staff. So early in the year, if you call us and say, you know, we can't afford a professional float, but we want to do something better, right? So we can put our staff at work to help you do something better. And you know, if you dress in the same outfits, if we give you something sparkly to carry, if you do even some simple hand movements that are choreographed, uh-huh, your entertainment value just went up a boatload.
Yes, it did.
Right?
Think of the guys with those not flags, but
those things,
scarves.
Uh huh.
Those guys were awesome.
They were awesome. That was one of the few entries I saw before I had to go put my head in a bucket of ice.
And you know, next week, those guys are performing downtown in a straight bar called M Bar.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. And you know, we used to allow entries in the parade to stop in front of the judges' stand and do a three-minute performance. Well, that really screwed things up.
Definitely
the parade
did.
Just, there was way too many gaps. So we're doing away with that. And our message to our entries this year will be, think of your performance as a 360-degree moving performance along the parade route.
Excellent.
So we're working hard to cut those gaps out. We are doing things to help our entries. We're going to do some parade workshops early in the year to help people think about what they want to do. We're doing things to help everybody elevate the quality of their entry without spending a lot of money. And, you know, maybe we work with some of our bigger sponsors to say, hey, pay for a float in the parade, and we'll put three or four nonprofits on it with their various signage. You know, because the sponsors don't have people to put on those floats. They could care less, but if, you know, we may be able to coordinate it that way. Just lots of different ideas to try to elevate the entertainment values, and we can do those things even this year.
So these parade workshops, how would someone find out about those and when they were going to occur?
Well, the best way to find out anything about Pride Houston is to go to our website, which is www.pridehouston.org. And by the way, the lead story on the website is about the contemplated move, and we've got an online survey going on, and we really encourage everybody in the community to register your opinion. It doesn't take more than about 5 minutes. I think there's a series of maybe 12 or 15 questions, and then there's an opportunity for you to free form tell us what you think as well, if you choose that option. So stay tuned to the website. We'll keep you informed of all of the things that are going on. And
so that's www.pridehouston.org.
Mm-hmm.
.org, not .net.
Yeah.
That's great. And y'all have really got it together.
Well,
very organized.
I was thinking about it, and that's why I joined Pride, because I was impressed historically with the organization that they had built. And you know, there's things we always want to do better, but in general, it marches right along, so to speak. but I don't know of any other organization in this community that I've been aware of who's done this kind of concerted due diligence to think about the future and how we can do things better and different for this community. I mean, we had two Accenture consultants donate almost $50,000 worth of their time to head up our task force evaluation effort this summer. We did phone interviews with Pride organizations all over the world to ask them what worked for them. Uh-huh. We met with every stakeholder that we could think of in this community, from bar owners to people who'd been in the parade in the past, to nonprofits, to business owners along the parade route, whatever we could think of. And now we're in the community feedback section of our effort.
Now, last year...
Oh, by the way, let me just stress that any changes would be for 2008, not 2007.
Right. That'd be way too soon to try to get something.
Well, whatever we decide to do, we want to have plenty of marketing time to let everybody know what's going on, get some good buzz.
And marketing... It's important. Yeah. I mean, for so long we were in the closet, so we weren't marketing. And then we were stuck in Montrose, not marketing. And it's about marketing. If we want people to understand us and love us, we got to tell them about us.
Yeah, I got to figure out how to reach people in Katy and in Willow Bend. And seriously, we've thought about things like buying ads on the grocery store carts at Kroger, you know, those on the front of the...
Or on the receipt that you get, you know, free car wash or whatever.
Yeah, so as we... spread out through the community, it presents a challenge to Pride Houston, but for every organization in our community. How do we reach those people who have gone out of our historic little enclave? Yep. Anybody's got any ideas? I'd love to hear about that.
So during the year, too, y'all also hold events to help raise money to support Pride Houston.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that this is, our budget's about $250,000 to produce this parade. It's a lot of money that we have to raise, and that comes from corporations, from individuals, from donations, from fundraisers, et cetera. But I'd like to take a minute to talk about, this isn't a fundraising program, but it's a community involvement effort that we're starting called Pride in Action, and it will ramp up in Thanksgiving of this year. And the idea is that on a year-round basis, we are going to send teams of Pride volunteers out to a variety of volunteer opportunities throughout the greater Houston area, not just DLBT events anymore. So if Bel Air is having a Arbor Day tree planting exercise and they've got volunteers planting trees along the Esplanade, we're going to send a group of Pride volunteers out to be a part of that effort. We've got some very attractive but distinctive Pride shirts. Mm-hmm. I got this idea from... when we went down to volunteer for Katrina relief, and you saw the Shell volunteers with those bright yellow T-shirts with the Shell logo. You could see them all the way across the Astrodome.
Yep.
So we thought that's a great way to do good things and to get the word out about your organization. So we will you'll see us participate in a variety of things. If you're interested in that program, go sign up to volunteer on our website, pridehouston.org. And
that's a great idea.
We'll have a running
talk
list.
About weaving into the fabric of our community.
Yeah.
That definitely is a great idea.
We believe that this fulfills the educate part of our mission, and what we are doing is educating the larger community that we are here, we're your neighbors, we're your friends, we're your fellow citizens, and we care about this city.
That's a great idea. Why are you in marketing?
I'm a salesman for a living, for God's sakes. That's my partial day job. I feel like Pride's been my full-time job. I just sell stuff on the side.
Well, you've done an awful lot of work around it.
It's not me. It's a dedicated team of many, many volunteers who work on a year-round basis to make this happen.
Yeah, I remember. Was it last year? I don't remember what month it was, but I went to some sing-along thing that y'all had.
Oh, yeah.
That was fun.
Was that last year, the sing-along show tunes brunch? Yeah,
that was
a little
fun. Are y'all going to do something like that again?
Well, we did one a couple of weeks ago, and it was not as successful as the first one.
I was out of town.
Why? I mean, everybody was saying, well, I would come, but Diane's not coming, so I'm not going to be there.
But I enjoyed it thoroughly, and I would have come to this one, but unfortunately I was out of town.
Well, you know, we try to do some different things. And the tough thing about any time you introduce a new event is, it's unique, so you're not competing on that basis, but people don't understand what it is. Everybody thought it was karaoke. It's not. It was a group sing-along. Yeah. But anyway.
It was fun, though.
Hey, you try some stuff.
You had a wine tasting, too, didn't you?
Yeah. The wine tasting is the signature thank you benefit for our Friends of Pride members.
Okay.
So Friends of Pride is our program that allows individuals to make financial contributions to Pride. And for contributions of $75 and above, we give you a fabulous package of benefits. And that's tickets to our very hoity-toity wine tasting event in June. Tickets to the VIP bleacher area to view the parade, and that has private porta potties and a private cash bar. So it's
that alone.
Yeah, I tell you, the porta potties are a big hit. And then for I think it's $250 or above, reserved parking.
My goodness.
Oh yeah.
Oh, how far away from the bleachers is
like
it?
A block. I mean,
wow.
Yeah, it's right there. We sold a lot of memberships for that. But it really does help us. It helps support us financially.
Yeah.
And it has become a good group of events for our Friends of Pride.
That is great. Are you thinking about adding any more events to that?
Well, we're doing things like every time you'll see us throw an event, you'll see a little discount for Friends of Pride.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes different community organizations come to us and want us to help promote things, and we'll throw in a little lineup for Friends of Pride. So a few benefits along the way. It's actually a fairly expensive program to produce, so
yeah,
there's not a lot else that we can throw in, but we've gotten really good reception from the benefits that we've got.
You know, and being a single lesbian, the first thing I think about is what a great place to meet people.
And, you know, I'm very proud to say that we've had a very good mix of men and women. That's one of the reasons I enjoy being a part of Pride in general, because the volunteer cadre is very strongly mixed. But our Friends of Pride organization has been very well supported by the women of our community, and that's nice to see, too.
Yep, and integrated.
Yeah.
It's very clear that our whole community, not just half of it,
thank you,
is participating in this event. Oh, man.
How are those pledges rolling in?
Come on, guys. 713-526-5738. Call in with your pledge.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, we do. I know that Chris already thanked someone who
Johnny
sent in an incredibly generous pledge.
And we appreciate it, Johnny.
Absolutely. But we could always use more, you know, because we didn't quite make our goal the last 2 weeks. So 713-526-5738, that pledge of support for After Hours and KPFT. Let the management know that queer programming should stay on the air, possibly earlier.
Do you think that Johnny's going to wake up tomorrow morning and go, I did what at 1:30 this morning? Going to be calling the credit card company going, that wasn't me, I didn't do that.
Y'all had a Pride event where there was an auction where you auctioned off dates or something, and I did that same thing. I woke up this morning, I did what?
What?
Yeah. Don't blame that one on me. I don't know about that one.
Yeah, but anyhow, guys, come on. We need your help out there.
We always do, yes. And we've got lots of folks who are sitting out there who would love to talk to you. And it's really easy to do. It takes 90.1 seconds.
Well, 90.1
seconds to fill out the form.
I'm a little worried about the phone answers. Some food was brought in earlier, mm-hmm, apparently, and I had a look at it. There's some pasta that has congealed to the approximate consistency of cement.
Yeah.
And I can only assume that if it looks like that in the pan, what does it look like inside your body now? So I think somebody ought to go nudge some of those volunteers and see if they're still alive.
KPFT, the radio that listens to you.
That's us. We have wonderful giveaways depending on, you know, the amount that you donate.
Well, give us a little taste. Like what?
Oh, for $150, it's a crank-up radio.
So you never need batteries?
You never need batteries. You crank it for 30 seconds, and it's good for an hour.
Well, and for $300, we'll throw in the batteries. Just an idea.
Or a cranker.
Yeah. Diane will crank for you.
I'll crank it for you.
You know, that it's a great thing to take to the beach.
Or during a storm. You've always got a radio to listen to what's going on.
Yes, yes, yes.
We have hurricanes here, I've heard. That would be good during a hurricane.
Yes.
As you're stuck on the freeway trying to evacuate the city.
And if George keeps it up, we could have a terrorist attack, and you definitely need then.
Well, now that the Democrats are in office, we know that the terrorists are celebrating and no doubt planning the next attack.
Oh, yes.
No doubt.
All that, it's the thin line that has kept us from being attacked so far.
Very
was George
thin.
W. Bush.
You know, I would have been happy with 16 seats.
Yeah.
Because we only needed 15, and I was just...
He got
swept
spanked.
Away.
Just spanked, didn't he?
Major spank.
He got the crap knocked out.
Thank
of
you. And now they're trying to spin it to claim that it was, well, it was only conservative Democrats that won, and this it really isn't a repudiation of the conservative agenda. And so now they're all fragmented. So the conservatives are saying, well, it's not a repudiation of the conservative agenda, it's just the Republicans got all out of whack. The Republicans are saying, well, it's the neocons that led us down the road. And pretty much everybody is saying
it
was George Bush who screwed this up. His approval as of today in Newsweek, a new low for him, 31%.
Wow.
Just a historical reference here. Clinton's low ever. Remember, he was the one they impeached, 36%. His dad's low was 29. Bush is at 31. But I know that you can try hard to exceed your dad. Keep on trying. You can go lower. Yeah. Reagan was 35, Carter 28, Nixon 23.
Oh, I didn't know Carter was 28.
Yeah, he was not very popular.
No, he wasn't. However, this election was worth it. If nothing else happens, it was worth it to get rid of Rumsfeld.
Thank you.
Woo.
Thank you.
Yeah. What?
Now, what can we do to get rid of Karl Rove?
You know, don't you think the bloom is off his rose, so to speak?
Oh, big time.
He just totally fell apart, didn't he?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did y'all hear about the robocalling that was going on in the closing days of the election? Everybody was talking about the big November surprise. This was a concerted effort by the Republican Party in key elections around the country to mislead the voting public. It was organized by the Republican National Committee, and they were doing repeated, they call it robocalling. It was repeated.
Robocalling.
Yeah, repeated. Just one call after another. They would call pretending to be representing the Democratic candidate, and they would call a household up to 10 times in a row. So the theory was you're just annoying the crap out of everybody, right?
And they intentionally called.
They intentionally called. That was the first tactic they were doing. Then they got even uglier. They would call and tell you, your polling place has been changed.
Isn't that an FCC violation?
You would think. It's also an election code violation. They would call and tell you that the election has been postponed. You're voting on Thursday, not Tuesday.
Now,
frankly, anybody who would buy that shouldn't be voting anyway.
Yeah.
But here was the scare. They actually have a recorded call of them calling and telling some guy, let's say he was in a state like Georgia. They called and said, we have a record that you have registered to vote in another state, New York. If you show up at the polls, you will be arrested for election fraud. So they were intentionally trying to...
Did they catch the group that was doing that?
It's the Republican National Committee. Yes, we know who did it.
Are there charges being brought?
They're looking at it. The Democrats have sworn that they are not going to roll over and let this go this time.
I hope not.
Yeah.
Oh, that's horrible.
And then... Is Laura Ingraham the name of a lady who's a lady, I use the term loosely, a media personality, mainstream media, right-wing media personality? I believe she was the one on Election Day who was telling her listeners to call and jam the phone lines of the Democratic Party was running a vote fraud hotline, so if you had any problems voting, there was a place for you to call and report it. She asked her conservative listeners to call and jam the phone lines of that to block people who had legitimate complaints about voting.
Wow.
So, you know, your ideology
that
is
not only election, but against election rules, but FCC rules, too.
Your ideology is pretty paper thin when you're having to resort to that kind of crap.
Yeah.
Wow, that's scary.
Well, apparently Tara wasn't scaring anybody anymore, you know?
Jeez, my knees. Oh, I can't believe. Where have I been? Why didn't I hear this?
Well, call me. I could have told you.
I should have called you.
Well, you probably, I tried to call you, but the phone lines were jammed.
Oh.
Whoa.
Speaking of jammed phone lines, we wish our phone lines were jammed.
No kidding.
Nobody's jamming our lines.
713-526-5738.
And, you know, we've tried to sweet talk you into it. Let me just say, if the phones don't start ringing, robocalling could be next for you.
Mm-hmm.
Call your house 10 times.
3 in the morning.
Yeah.
Hello.
You know, but to do it the way the Republicans did it, we'd have to claim to be Dan Patrick on conservative talk show radio.
That's right.
They get daytime errors.
Yeah. Okay, we're getting a little punch drunk.
Yes, we are. Well, that's because it's 2:35 and our show is coming to a close.
Yeah, sorry.
Well, but darn the luck.
Darn the luck. We sure wish we had just one more pledge before our show was over,
though. That would be nice.
Johnny, call back again. Nice. Surely you're not asleep yet. You've got that credit card
Johnny,
out.
Johnny, you have
just
friends,
call.
Don't you? They're probably like you.
Yeah. Remember, you could get batteries for that radio, Johnny.
Ooh-hoo.
I'm just saying.
I'll crank it.
Or I'll crank it.
We'll all crank it.
And I'll just
never have to do anything.
Maybe he'd rather I cranked his batteries.
Well, could I just watch?
Probably.
Anyway, that number, 713-526-5738. Diane, thank you.
Thank you, Carol.
Always a pleasure to be on. Thank you.
And we've got some outgoing music. We'll see you next month.
Bye-bye.
Got some outgoing music here from Ellis from her CD, Evidence of Joy. And it's my favorite on the CD. Hope you like it, too.
Stars hanging over our heads. With you I forget all my frowning, it's true. My feet are so light, and baby, I've got heavy shoes. I've got a thing for you. I figured it out. You are all I think about. It's time I spread the news. Your smile is so bright. You know you got me all right. Yes, I've got a thing for you. Stupidly red, just in case I haven't said, I've got a thing, you know, a very sweet thing. I'm crazy. With
lying, I do. Because the public won't acknowledge my love for you. They ain't slanging no checks from under this roof right here. You don't hear me though, I promise you to do the best I can. I'm on both knees asking you to be your man. I'm talking wedding dance, diamond rings and things that bling. A ceremony held that it comes to a long way. Because I love you, bitch. Folks don't understand to tell the truth. I could really give less than a damn. And any relative that ain't relative to us will object to a union and invitation. No matter, as long as we got the rings and best man, true family and good friends. Oh yeah, and one more correction. You won't be my lover anymore. You'll be my husband, a wife.
I respect.
Hiatus for a while.
Yes, how's your hiatus? Anyway, don't we have somebody to thank?
Yes, we have to thank Jana.
Hey, Jana, thank you. And Jana has pledged before.
Yes.
I know she is not a virgin.
Once again, you know, apparently, you know, I have to clarify something.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny called back. When Johnny put in his pledge earlier,
yeah.
I referred to him as a virgin.
Yes, I see the note here.
I didn't get a chance to clarify at the time, but when we say virgin in that sense, if you're a virgin donating to KPFT,
right.
I don't want to impugn any claim of virginity on anyone out there who's a slut.
I know.
So, my apologies. Johnny is not a virgin. He's
and we're very glad of that, because I think being a virgin is probably the most horrible thing in the world.
Yes.
No, I'm a virgin.
Where?
Yeah, right. Did you get a new hole drilled in somewhere that you're claiming virginity?
By the ancient definition, I'm a virgin. I've never had a child.
Well, I mean, I guess you just have a strap-on orifice. I mean, my goodness, they've come up with disposable temporary foreskins.
What?
I mentioned that back in the old days before.
Why would you want a temporary one?
If you don't have one, it's the Lee press-on foreskin, apparently.
I've got to go out and get my rubber boots.
They've created a product. There's a market. I mean, yeah, they just made the thing this past, although I've heard about it for a couple of years, you know, a snap-on condom. For those who can't handle putting on a condom, they've now created in South Africa.
Yes, I read about this.
A condom that you break in half, and then where you break in half, you now have two wings.
And you just pull it down.
And you put it on, and then you peel the wings off.
Well.
But, well, you know, there was a couple of years ago, they were talking about a spray-on condom. Yeah. So, yeah.
I can see the BBSM thing going there.
Well, technically, you know, I guess if you put on enough liquid latex to make sure it's completely covered, it...
You know, long ago, at the beginning of the epidemic, there was these great little condoms that just fit over the head. That was it.
Okay.
Boy, they worked great for me.
Well, they do have them now. It's kind of you put on the end of a gun when you go out in water.
Yeah. Anyway, back to Johnny. If he wants to prove he's not a virgin, the address here is 419 Nugget Boulevard. And we will take care of that.
And for his pledge, he's eligible for a crank, from a cranker. You get the choice of radio or
me.
Host.
Yes. I'll crank your battery, Daddy.
You do it anyway. So well, okay.
I ought to put
a crank or a...
Well, it is an old crank here, but...
a new crank or an old one?
Hey.
Take your pick.
That's right.
I'll have to find the story on the...
Anyway, Gigi.
Yeah.
Hi, dear. You've been here since the beginning of the show.
Oh, yes.
Waiting patiently.
Oh, yes.
And what are you bringing us this month?
This month, I'm coming into the more spiritual side of things.
Okay.
One of the things I've been working on is putting together some training programs on both sacred sex and touching lightly on tantric sex and the Kama Sutra. So I thought tonight I'd kind of go over some of the stuff from the Kama Sutra and tantric sex. And...
Yes, we were doing research over here. Yes, it's research.
Oh, okay.
Research, yeah, lots and lots of research.
And while I kind of take more of the Western approach than the Eastern to these things, you know me, I think the more I come, the better.
Right.
Which is a little different from the Eastern philosophy that kind of...
Yeah, kind of like the glazed donut theory.
And considering some of the pictures I've seen of some of the poses,
oh yes,
they do. Me and Robin ain't gonna do it.
Well, a lot of people see that, and that's right. Not what tantric sex is all about.
Right.
I mean, that's part of it, or can be part of it. I have done many of those poses. Positions in the past, and
right.
Some of them are, well, I can't do the lotus position, but sit in a lotus position. But I can modify some of them.
Right.
Back in my gymnastic days, I was pretty flexible, though.
Okay.
And I once had a boyfriend that was very much into tantric sex, so I learned a lot from him.
Right.
And just discovered that, you know, well, in our society, we kind of look at sex as a mostly physical thing. And when you start getting into tantric sex or start following some of the things from the Kama Sutra, you're starting to get more into the spiritual realm of sexuality.
Right.
And it's also the spiritual realm of how we see people. Instead of seeing a person as a physical body, we start seeing them as a spirit that's housed in a physical body.
Yeah.
And So I want to kind of go over a few things, just because I know there's a lot of stuff out there about tantric sex and the Kama Sutra. I have read the entire Kama Sutra.
Okay.
And a large part of it is really about how one should eat and hygiene and learning arts and self-development. It goes much further than just sexuality.
Right.
And I think Tantra does, too, right, to some degree.
Really part of a whole lifestyle, not just the sexual, but spiritual, yeah, physical, the mental, just a whole, you know, lifestyle, really.
Yeah. And part of, one of the central themes for me for tantric sex is getting in touch with the Kundalini energy.
All right.
The serpent that connects all your chakras through sexual play and brings forth this energy all the way through your body and makes sex a whole body experience, right, instead of just an experience in the groin.
Oh, yeah.
So, and part of what I do in temple is to channel sex energy a lot of times. And that's in part using this kind of philosophy of raising up the Kundalini energy and then channeling erotic energy and a lot of what's inside of us.
Right.
One thing I'd like to say about, and this is kind of my own personal perspective on all this, is that, you know, there's a lot that our culture doesn't understand. Like when a human infant is first born, if it doesn't receive touch, human touch, it will die. They don't know what gets transmitted.
Okay.
Through human touch, but we transmit something very powerful when we touch one another. When we start getting into erotic touch, it becomes even more powerful.
Okay, yeah.
And we live in a fairly touch-deprived society in this world. Get into any elevator, and it's amazing. You know, the more crowded it gets, the more people kind of shrink into themselves so they won't touch one another. But you know, I kind of see touch as, for adults anyway, is crucial to both mental health and physical health. And it's also starts working with the chakras. When we become closed off, we shut off that energy field around our bodies.
Right. Yep.
And I think part of the beauty I see in tantric sex is it's a way to start reopening the chakras, that energy field around our bodies.
Right.
And part of that is in, really relates to touch and erotic touch and bringing us to that state of ecstasy.
Right.
And this is more from Greek philosophy, but when the Greeks believed that if humans ate ambrosia, they would reach this high state of ecstasy and become godlike or goddess-like and have the powers of gods and goddesses and also become immortal.
Okay.
And, you know, I kind of look at that and think, you know, ecstasy is a higher state of consciousness.
Yeah.
When we have just regular sex like we do in our culture, we still reach a state of ecstasy. In tantric sex, the state of ecstasy is prolonged. It's not like you stick it in, get it off, and you're done.
Really.
And it also involves learning techniques how to work with your body, developing your sex muscles.
Right.
Doing PC muscle exercises each day. And I've been practicing mine for many, many years. It's really incredible.
Okay.
You look like you have a question.
Well, I was just going to comment. We've been working together off and on for several years. I'm wanting to learn more about this for myself. I've had some other experience. I've taken a couple of the courses that are offered by the Body Electric School.
Oh, yeah.
And done some things with that. I remember one time there was a group of us got together, people who had done the class, the weekend retreat, got together to have a massage session.
Yeah.
Had this experience. I'm laying on this massage table, buck naked. I got these four men rubbing me in every sort of way, and I had what I believe was a body orgasm. I did not ejaculate, but I still had an orgasm. And my experience was, when it happened, was a little frightening, but when it was done, it's like, let's do that again.
And that's the other, when in tantric sex, the goal is not necessarily to have an ejaculatory orgasm.
Yeah.
In fact, with one of the philosophies behind tantric sex is that the male should rarely ejaculate.
Okay.
Because it's believed that the ejaculate is kind of a life essence. And when you ejaculate, you're giving up part of your life essence, and that you'll age faster and and weaken the body.
Right.
Now, I've been very active all my life. I ejaculate like a fountain.
I've seen that descriptions.
What's it to the old faithful here?
And I'm more on the Western view that the more you use it, the healthier you are. And I see it not so much as something to hold on to, but something to give forth.
Right.
And I also am more Western in my thinking, in the sense of when you put love energy out into the world, then it comes back to you from many different sources. And that as you share erotic energy, it's not a giving up, it's a synergy is created, and all of a sudden all this energy will come back tenfold.
Okay.
So, and that has for me, baby.
Okay.
But one of the things I'm working on, and this, bring up the tantric and the Kama Sutra, because part of what I'm working on is some new forms of sacred sex and spiritual sexuality, and working on some programs, developing some new programs on how to reach a higher state through sexual expression. And part of it's getting in touch with the child within, and this is getting totally away from tantric.
Right.
Although tantric does, I think, sometimes bring about this kind of childlike nature in a sense. It approaches sexuality from a more healthy perspective.
Okay.
Yeah. Not as something dirty or something that's done only in the bedroom or between two couples.
Right.
I mean, two people.
Two people. You are a couple.
Yeah.
Hold on one second, Gigi. I got to step in. It's top of the hour, so I've got to stick this in your ear real quick.
Here at KPFT, your vote matters most. Now here's a word from one of our candidates.
Hi, I'm Bob Sanborn, or Dr. Bob, as many of you know me. Yes, I'm running for the board here at KPFT. Why? Because service is something I care about dearly, and I care about non-commercial radio. For those of you who don't know me, I'm a longtime activist and advocate for children and education here in Houston. Currently, I'm the CEO of Children at Risk, a nonprofit advocacy group. Previously, I spent many years at Rice University as the Associate Dean for Student Affairs. And also previously, I served as the Dean of Hampshire College in Amherst, Massachusetts. I grew up in Puerto Rico, But Houston is my home and where I make a difference. I hope that you will help me make a difference and vote in the KPFT elections. I'm Bob Sanborn, and thank you for your support. Peace.
This is 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
They talk.
Oh, we're back. Hello. Well, we've been talking about tantric sex and about the Kama Sutra. I've been studying it off and on for many years, but not really under guidance, more from books, and I've practiced, well, except for with that first boyfriend that got me into it. He gave me some guidance, but for the most part, I've kind of, you know, I'm very eclectic pagan, so I borrow a little bit from one tradition and some from another and bring them together and kind of work out a way that, an approach that works for me. But we've got a guest in our studio tonight that's been involved in tantric sex, I think on a little deeper level than I was.
No. last time I was here on the radio station, it was maybe some 25 years ago.
So re-identify yourself.
Yes, my name is Paul. I was a member of the gay youth program with that Ray Hill hosted. It was a wonderful part of my life. But I'm very impressed with Gigi's slant on tantric sex. From a Western perspective, I've been very interested for many years, about 10-15 years, in tantric history, literature, culture, and I think tantra for the West really addresses a huge gap in our culture, which has to do with spirituality and sexuality. Mm-hmm. And I'm unlike a lot of purists, I still really honor a lot of, I think America is really interested in tantra and tantric culture, and I think it is very valid. I think a lot of our experimentation in tantric projections is actually very valid, and I think some of the things that Gigi talked about are actually consistent with a lot of the literature. He talked about the sense of touch, which in some literature is saying that that's the predominant sense of the Shakti, of the feminine energy. But some of it, you know, really gets into just kind of ridiculous stuff that I hear talking about just orgasm at all costs. But I was very impressed with Gigi's, the frame of reference that he talked about, that there's something more, and there's something more in the sexual experience. And I think that's the essence of a lot of tantra. And how do you define orgasm? How do you define it as just ejaculate? Do you define it? And on the other side of the spectrum, you know, there still is on the Eastern side a lot of controversy about this notion of no ejaculation for the male.
Right.
And people actually are questioning the terminology of this, because in Sanskrit, I think the word is shukram. There is a term, there's a phrase that if a true tantric is cut with a knife, they will bleed semen.
Mm-hmm.
The word shukram is used for females and males. So this discounts the notion that they're just focusing on male ejaculate.
Mm-hmm.
They use the word shukram for both feminine and for men when they're talking about ejaculate. that they're able to internalize this experience so that it becomes part of their lifeblood experience rather than something that's just discarded.
Right.
So,
and I think you touch on a couple of things here that I would like to address. One of the things I find very beautiful about tantric sex is some of the symbology. And there's a lot of argument I've heard about mm-hmm. what it really means. Is it literal or is it metaphorical? When they get into the fish, the meat, the wine.
Oh, okay. Those are the five. Those are the five M's.
Yes. And then sexuality, spiritual sexuality. And, you know, I've been reading a lot lately on different interpretations on what those mean. And there seems to be a lot of back and forth, but one thing I came across was that the fish represents the female, the meat, the male, the wine, the semen and bodily fluids, the what's the other one? After wine.
Parched grain
is
that's also the linguistically.
Body.
But you also have to consider, you know, textually and historically, the Indian tradition
mm-hmm.
that meat and alcohol are considered forbidden substances.
Right.
So you do have to consider that this is a Tantra is on the of the Hindu tradition. It's on the fringe, but it is also strangely part of the Orthodox.
Yes.
It is unorthodox, but orthodox at the same time.
And the other thing I love about tantric is the paradoxes.
Yes.
Because, you know, you get into some of these things and it seems like both are true at the same time, and they are.
Yeah.
Once you dig a little deeper. But to the Western mind, it's like, well, how can it be true that it's both at once?
But that's such a Hindu state
oh, yes.
of mind. That's such a that is such a. I'm not going to be pretend to be an expert, but I know enough, and I've talked to enough Indian and even people. There is a new Bengali temple in Houston
mm-hmm.
devoted to Shakti, and they celebrated actually the Kali Puja.
Mm-hmm.
And in Bengal, in India in particular, they have a very strong tantric tradition
mm-hmm.
that is devoted to goddess energy. And just talking to a lot of Indians, that a lot of the tantras may be considered controversial, but they are considered orthodox or traditional at the same time.
And they're reverend.
Exactly.
The other thing I need to also say about tantric sex, which I got a lot from, was the importance of breathing and learning different ways of breathing during sex. And it is incredible how much just changing the way you breathe will change everything about sex. It is, I mean, the way you touch, the way you feel, the way you receive touch. The other element that I've always loved about, well, it's not just limited to Tantra, but many ancient cultures had this belief that in many of the ancient sex temples that people went to the temple not only to worship the gods, but to be worshipped as a god or goddess.
Well, that is unique in the Indian tradition about tantric and tantric practice. It is the mm-hmm. only that I know of in tantric ritual that the individual actually identifies himself as the god, because that is a tantric quote or a tantric saying that only a god can worship a god.
Mm-hmm.
It is the essence of heresy in our Judeo-Christian tradition. But it is tradition in the East. It is a different take on the technique of spirituality.
Yeah.
And the essence of the human body with Tantra is very key, and the notion of the union of the microcosm and macrocosm that the human body in itself incorporates. And that's the whole, when you talk about chakras, that is essentially tantric terminology.
Yeah.
And it came up through tantric philosophies.
Of course, I've been studying so many different ancient religions and philosophies, and I see little bits and pieces that sometimes have different terminology, but often coincide, especially from ancient Greece. The ancient Greeks kind of went around for a while in circles on this whole body-spirit issue, up until Aristotle, who came up with the scientific method and kind of said, okay, none of that really exists.
Well, the Greeks
but
became...
up until then, there, you know, with Socrates started with saying, well, what, you know, what is beauty? Give me a definition. And then he would come up with counterexamples. And it kind of opened this doorway to saying, well, there must be something that is true beauty. And it was in his pupil, Plato, who said, well, true beauty exists, but it's not on this plane. All we see is a shadow of true beauty. And this kind of opened this whole notion. And then Aristotle came along after he was Plato's pupil, and he says, well, no, that just doesn't exist.
Well, late
and I'm kind of putting this real simply here.
But it's amazing if you study a lot of late Greek philosophers and philosophic developments, especially in Alexandria, Egypt, it really becomes almost tantric. And the notion of theurgy that a lot of the late Greek schools of philosophy, Plotinus and especially the texts of the Hermetic texts of Hermes Trismegistus, where the adept actually has to identify themselves with the deity, and the notion of theurgy, which the Greeks became fascinated with the religion of the Egyptians.
Yes.
And Iamblichus, one of the late Greek philosophers, they developed, they started going off on this very ritualistic interpretation of Egyptian and incorporating it into their Greek philosophy. And the notion of drawing down the spirits. But a lot of this Hermetic practice and Hermetic texts, you can actually compare them with tantric philosophy, tantric literature. It's actually quite amazing for a Western. I think the West becomes very Eastern in that period.
Yeah.
Before Christianity, or maybe right at the same time that Christianity appears.
Well, and also I think there's influences going back and forth. There's evidence that the Indian, the tantric, came from, oh, I forget the god's name.
Well, in Hinduism, Shiva is considered the author of Tantra.
Yeah, but no, I mean, if you trace some lines back even further, you start seeing certain parallels between some of the ancient Egyptian, Sumerian, and Tantric that seemed to cross-reference each other very loosely. Mm. So there was definitely some influence going on between a lot of these ancient civilizations. But we're getting very far deep here. We need to get back to sex.
Well, thank you. Let's get out of the classroom, back in the bedroom.
Well, I like to bring some of these things up because
but you're
I think
talking
it
about
is important to understand that with whenever we talk about sex in this culture, we're so culturated to think of marriage and about such a limited framework.
And also quantitative.
Yes.
But you're talking about a lot of qualitative aspects.
And, well, not only that, but a lot of people don't realize that modern-day marriage started in Queen Elizabeth's court as a game for the nobility. That's where we get the word courtship. That's where we get the word courting. That's where we get the word chaperone. That's where we get a lot of words that are used in the notion of romantic love. Romantic love didn't exist before Queen Elizabeth's court. Marriages were arranged. They were designed to preserve a class system. People didn't go out and fall in love and get married. A lot of times, marriages were arranged when a child was born, and once they reached their coming of age, they were married to the person that the parents had contracted at their birth. They had no say in it. Yeah. And so the whole concept of romantic love started as a court game and by nobility who were bored stiff and tired of their spouses that they had no say in being a partner with. And so it became, and they wrote all kinds of manuals on who you could have one of these romantic affairs with and who you couldn't. And there's very explicit, detailed manuals on behaviors. And it was amazing to me when I started learning some of these things that, you know, wow. So this is where our present-day concept of marriage came from. It started as a court game.
Yeah, you swear to God, it was thousands and thousands of years ago.
I've been told that the notion that says you have to have some official, like a priest or minister there, to officiate the ceremony is itself a relatively recent thing.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple may, you know, say they're going to get married, and they just, somebody got to, hey, let's have the priest bless us.
Mm-hmm.
And the priest, they asked, and the priest said, okay, I'll do it, and did it. And then somewhere along the way, the idea caught on, and the priest started thinking, hey, wait a minute, this may be a way to bring a little extra money in, too.
Well, it's more than just money. It's right. About, you know, when you look at, if you go way, way back, you know, when the early pre-writing, pre-dawn of civilization, human beings ran around as tribes, and there wasn't this sense of possessing. The tribe, there wasn't this sense of a family unit. The tribe took care of you. You helped the tribe. Mm-hmm. There were no real individual possessions in the sense of passing wealth down, or the tribe took care of you. And when you died, what you had was either buried with you or was the tribe. Mm-hmm. Later on, it didn't matter who the mother or father was. But once we started getting more into a patriarchal society and started building this sense of ownership, then all of a sudden, when someone died, wealth had to pass down the line. And all of a sudden, it became all important for wealth to go from father to son. And how do you prove who the father is? Through monogamy. You can always tell who the mother is.
Even if it used to be where they used to pass it down through the mother and daughter?
Well, that's something of a misnomer. It may have happened in a but I think it was more... wealth was really more shared within the tribe. Not really... there wasn't that direct lineage of wealth being passed down.
Kind of like the tribes today, some of them, like up in Indonesia and stuff.
Exactly.
Where they have the girl wants to meet the guy, and the guy wants to meet the girl, and he wants to marry her. So usually what happened is they would go to the mother, and they would ask the mom, and the mom would say, well, this is what you have to do. You have to have... a mural, have a decent garden and a decent home. So him and his brothers and cousins would get together, make sure they get a decent mural, and then they would have a mural that they had to donate to the girls' tribe, because it's usually a different tribal group that they're in. And usually what happens is to make the marriage known is, I mean, make the marriage settle, is they come by, and if the guy, they like the house, and he can be able to take care of her, and she can do her feet, her woman in duties, tending the garden or whatever she does, they let her go ahead and live with him. That was just the marriage.
But I bring a lot of this up because, you know, we've got this kind of notion of... values in our culture that, you know, marriage is this kind of sacred thing, and that, you know, and we tend as a culture to value monogamy very highly. And that's so very counter to many, many different cultures from the past. And even in the present days, many cultures still... do not look at marriage and relationships in the same light as we do, and yet they are still sacred and still have you know, it's kind of interesting because everything that gets kind of defined is so arbitrary from culture to culture. At one time boys were dressed in pink and girls were dressed in blue. because pink symbolized the color red, kind of watered down because the child wasn't a full man yet.
Right. Red being the color of the warrior.
Right. And so you have all these, you know, it's just this kind of arbitrary... thing. Taboo is the same way.
Right.
Most taboos are very arbitrarily put into place or evolve within a society. But each, you know, they change from society to society. It's all a very arbitrary occurrence.
It will evolve within a society. You know, just saying, like the issue thing about the blue and pink. And I can think of other things that people might think of as being normal, but in practice, the habit may have been taken on, you know, within the last 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, because some, you know, something happened to suggest it, or somehow evolved, or somebody came up with an idea which somehow took hold, and it changed.
So. I bring these things up because even sexual expression... we have in our culture so many taboos about sexual expression and how you can express sexuality to another person. And, you know, it's just so rigid. I think that's one of the other things I love about tantric and some of the ideals in Tantra is the sense of sexuality is not something you can kind of put in little boxes. It's something to be fully expressed and explored and even taught. And you think about our sex education, and then you look at the Kama Sutra, which is kind of partly a sexual handbook, and the extensive sexual training that someone in India would get at a young age. And you look at the sex education we get, you know, usually scare tactics, a few videos on STDs, and I remember the one from my high school way back, you know, all this stuff about, well, if you do it, and you're going to get this girl pregnant, and then you're going to have STDs, and so you shouldn't do it until you get married, and then become...
And also one of the ultimate is just the notion in Tantra of God having sex.
Yeah.
How does God have sex?
Yeah.
Can God have sex? Why not?
And there's a lot of creation myths. Not just tantric, but it is in tantric. But there's a lot of creation myths that God was a woman, well, an androgynous being, who impregnated herself and gave birth to the world and the universe. And before... she was the only thing in existence until she gave birth, and she impregnated herself. She was both the male and the female. And if you look at biology, the primary gender is female. Mm-hmm. When something goes wrong in gender development, we revert back to female.
And tantric mythology does privilege the feminine.
Mm-hmm.
And in Indian, Shakti means power.
Yeah.
Shakti is the notion for the feminine goddess. They claim, you know, Shiva is the male principle. And they say Shiva is the concept of fire, but Shakti is its power to burn.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a tantric principle.
And the womb is the altar, and the pubic hair is the flames.
There you go. Oh, wow.
And so you get into some of these concepts.
An old-time religion.
Well, in my van, I've got this wonderful bumper sticker. If you have a screaming orgasm and nobody shouts amen, maybe you're in the wrong church. But I would like to talk a little bit more on the spiritual side. On sexuality and some of the things that I've experienced. And even though I don't follow Tantra, I have borrowed many concepts from Tantra and incorporated it into with many other things. But I know that
well, then you should be a follower.
Well, I don't want to cut out some of the other things. And there are some problems with Tantra in the sense that it is primarily taught as a heterosexual coupling.
You know,
there's some reinterpretations. There's a lot of room.
There's a lot of room.
What I'm saying, though, is that it's primarily taught as a heterosexual coupling. When you look at all the diagrams and everything else, and, you know, I've got a girlfriend, I've got boyfriends. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is that I'm also a hermaphrodite, and so I'm both male and female.
Well, that's actually what Tantra tries to get in touch
with.
And the hermaphroditic element in every created being or thing.
Yeah.
And that's also an alchemical from the Western.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, from tantric perspective, that is always to be considered. So that could even be applied. I was in San Francisco and went to the Dildo Museum.
Oh, wow.
But they did have a fabulous book on tantra for gay men.
Yeah.
And I thought it was fairly decent, but there's a lot of exploration, and for gay males, there is sexually an element in a sort of secret tantric practice that deals with kundalini energy, which has to do with the base chakra and anal sex.
Yeah.
And that is always in a lot of even Hindu tantric, that is an element that exists. Mm-hmm. So even though they...
Yeah, I'm familiar that it's mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. It's just, once again, there's so many different things I pull from.
Right.
In my own practices, that you might think of it this way.
But you don't want to confuse the Western, like, you know, California sex... You know, right. Interpretation of tantra, unending orgasm, with the actual practice or philosophical tradition
right.
of India yeah. or of the origin,
mm-hmm.
which is not necessarily so focused on an actual practice, whereas a lot of interpretations or Western
mm-hmm.
American interpretations of tantra are just, you know, specifically focused on heterosexual sex,
right.
or just interpret it in that way.
Yeah.
Because as you were saying before, tantra is about multi-levels of interpretation.
Exactly. And the other thing, well, I do want to kind of get into some of my experiences and some of the things I've incorporated from tantra. One of the things that I love about some of the philosophies and some of the teachings are about developing our sexual muscles, the PC muscles, and learning to gain control over orgasm. And I've gone with sexual stimulation round the clock for a whole weekend with a male and a female, well, several males and several females, through a ritual where I did not reach ejaculatory orgasm or any other type of orgasm till at the very end. And that was when all of a sudden, all this energy that had been building all weekend long just started flowing throughout my entire body. And I started getting in touch with what the tantrics, I forget the word, reach when they do have an out-of-body experience. And all of a sudden the psychogenesis, I'm forgetting words right now, the psychedelic kind of, they call it kind of, I guess loosely translated, a mind-blowing experience, as well as a, what's the other word, mind-expansive experience. And it was like all of a sudden my whole body became just full of orgasm in every cell. And all of a sudden I was outside my body, but also inside my body all at the same time. And it's just this amazing sense of all is one. It was what washed all through me. But I am not a separate entity. I am part of everything, and everything's part of me. And I think that's what they mean when all of a sudden you fully actualize that you are a god or a goddess. Because what is a god but all of everything, and we're all interconnected.
Well, that works for me. But I, you know, there's the word in Sanskrit with Hinduism also, the notion of pleasure and bliss, and the notion that even in Orthodox Hinduism that accepts an attribute of the divine as bliss. And Tantra really plays on that, mm-hmm. and the correlation and the sort of jumping point.
Yeah.
You know, why focus on the ascetic? Why focus on the, that's their, why focus on the negation? Why don't you focus on the positive? What are the correlations between your average everyday experience of pleasure, and how is that so much more alike to spiritual experience than otherwise? And building on that.
And one of the things, you know, throughout my life I've discovered and rediscovered many times is that sex is very powerful. Sensuality and touching is so very powerful. When you can get with someone and all of a sudden just barely feathery touch their body, it is amazing what happens. And think about it this way. We walk down the street. We're constantly getting genital stimulation. Yet it doesn't do anything for us. I mean, you can't walk down the street without getting genital stimulation. It goes to the background of the mind. You barely register it. The other phenomenon I find so intriguing is that less touch sometimes is more. Sometimes more touch
is less.
More.
Mm.
Depending on your point of focus and where you go with it.
But Tantra also focuses on, you know, the sex drive is the primary urge. You know, the primary urge of biological, and how do you deal with it? And how do you ignore it? Or do you focus on it? And there are many different quotes that I've come across, and one of them actually in a Buddhist tantra is saying that all beings are rushing towards bliss. And I think tantra takes, you know, a different and experimental approach, even in its own tradition. It's a very experimental approach, which I think validates a lot of the developments in the U.S. and a lot of the contemporary developments, because it always was experimental.
Oh, yes.
It was not just purely theoretical. They wanted to get away from theory. They wanted to get away from dry theoretical scholasticism. They wanted the real stuff. They wanted the juice.
How are you?
Oh, yeah. And I think that's part of why I'm into what I'm into, is that I am totally into this kind of exploratory path. Nothing's real sure. I try so many different things, and then sexually and sensually. And, you know, I mean, it's just incredible where we can go if we free ourselves up a little bit. I would like to talk a little bit about an experience I had down at the beach. I used to go down and I'd have this little bitty bikini that I'd wear when I go body surfing. And I'd get out off to myself somewhere and take the bikini off and start riding the waves to orgasm. And it was just, when you arch your back just the right way and the wave catches you, it gives this intense genital stimulation that is just awesome. And I'd just spend all afternoon just riding the waves. Orgasm, sometimes ejaculatory, sometimes non-ejaculatory, but I'd just be getting, let the sea just caress my body. And it was just this intense sense of being one with the water. And it said that life, biologically in our society, we say it's from water that life came. And so there's this kind of almost metaphysical and metaphorical experience of love and water and being nurtured and held by the sea. That was a big mouthful, wasn't it? So, you know, it's amazing the many different ways that we can reach this sense of ecstasy and connection, not only with one another, but with nature and our environment, through sensuality and sexuality. And it truly does become a spiritual when you can become so connected. It's amazing. But anyway, I think it may be time to go to some music soon, and then we don't have much time left on the show, so we'll do a recap.
Oh, we can find something to talk about.
Oh, yes. We'll come back for a little round table. And
so we'll put a little Nunez in your ear, and we'll be back in just a bit.
Thank you.
I'm not afraid to
Wonder what it was on his Christmas list when he was a kid.
For real.
We don't, we ought to team that song up with Aqua Barbie Girl.
Yeah.
Since I like doing this sort of
Well, I'm things. Really happy with the money that we've raised tonight.
Praise Jesus. We did well for a change.
Yeah. We certainly did.
Well, I would like to say one thing real quick.
Sure.
You know, I'm kind of thinking, leaning towards calling this segment now that I'm doing spiritual sexuality, even though sometimes we get into more mundane things.
Mm.
But, because I am getting more and more into the spiritual sexuality.
I know. But, you know, this segment is for you to do whatever you want to do, because I know your varied interests, you know, not only the sacred sex, but radical fairies and bisexuality and
BDSM,
being leather,
a hermaphrodite,
got it,
intersex,
yeah.
And being
into. You're like all the kink rolled up into one.
Oh, yes, totally.
I love it.
He said variety burrito.
And I did want to kind of do a slight recap of our show. We've been talking about tantric sex. And one of my most awesome experiences, some of my most awesome experiences, was when I had sex with either both a man and a woman, or two men, or two women, all at the same time.
Yeah.
And they were penetrating me, and me, one of them. And all of a sudden, they were screwing each other through my body. And this energy flow just became so awesome. It's like they were both screwing me and screwing each other. And it's just this incredible experience of love and connection. I remember one time I was with another man and a woman, and she was in the middle, and I could feel him through
yes
the lining between the rectum and the vagina, and I could feel every stroke he was doing as he could feel every stroke I was doing. And it was just this amazing connection.
I've heard that, yes.
And it's just this incredible experience of just this channeling of sex energy to each other, you know, on so many different levels.
Yeah.
I mean, part of it was physical, but part of it was very definitely this amazing erotic energy flow going through and around us.
Okay, we're almost out of time here. And I know, did we have a letter?
Yeah, we had a letter from Tigger.
Hey, Tigger.
He's going to try and get a hold of us on air tonight. Uh-huh. Well, he's hoping the signal will work with it. He did find out that we are on Saturday nights back again. And he's hoping everyone is doing well. Like I said, he's glad that he's got us back, and he's trying to turn on more friends to
good
the show, and he's hoping he can get an updated schedule. We'll get one out to him
okay
on that, so he knows what all the KPFT programming is.
Absolutely.
On that, and thanks to Jana and Johnny.
Yes.
For their very generous pledges.
Both of them, extremely generous pledges.
And as far as I know, that makes it should it be that the station is now up to 300,000 for
the total
pledge drive.
Yeah, that'd be
so
great.
We're almost around the corner, and next week when we return, we won't be having
right. This pledge drive should end tomorrow.
Should
yes, well Sunday, sometime Sunday.
And I do have to say, send in another pledge tonight, and I won't just crank your little radio,
ooh,
baby. I'll crank some other things.
There you go. 713-526-5738. 713-JAM-KPFT.
And we can crank it right.
We can crank, yeah, we can crank your radio. Yes, we can. How much time do we have left here?
Well, I can either go to music or we can BS for a little bit.
Yeah, let's BS for a little bit.
Well, let's see. One of the things I noticed this week is, you know, it's so hard to find a present for someone who is making a little good chunk of change.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, the best thing you do is get them an entry into the dictionary.
Oh.
Reichen Luchenhagen, whatever his name is, the boyfriend of Lance Bass,
yes,
has coined a phrase in honor of his boyfriend.
Yeah.
He announced that Neil Patrick Harris was lanced.
Lanced?
Yeah. According to Reichen, you know, that means, you know, a celebrity being outed. I think the proper definition for lanced means a celebrity who's trying to fool people by saying he's not gay while hanging out with gay men at gay bars, at gay resorts, exchanging clothing with gay men, or just getting your boyfriend a guest appearance on your show. That's what happened to Neil. That's how he got out.
Oh.
Is his Canadian theater boyfriend was given a guest appearance on How I Met Your Mother.
Oh.
And so people put two and two together and came up with fag. And that's
the story. That's what
did it,
huh?
That's how they found out the Doogie.
Wow.
Doogie. Ooh, that was such a wrong way of thinking it. Doogie does it doggy style. That was wrong of me.
Doogie Bowser Wowser, huh?
See what happens? See, that was the part that pissed me off about my hiatus, wink, wink.
Yes.
Is, you know, I had, you know, the priest with a hustler.
Yeah.
Doogie Howser coming out.
Yep.
And it's like, I'm sitting at home going, I can't say.
You can't talk about any of this great stuff going on. I know.
I even spent a day researching trying to find that.
It wasn't
exactly.
Oh yeah, there was a priest with a kid.
Well, not a
kid. But also the Ted. What's his name?
Yeah, the Ted. I didn't know the priest and the kid. There
yeah.
Was,
yeah.
Ted Haggard.
Yeah.
There was a story out there about a teacher who. Who was supposedly molesting one of his students, and passed on HIV to him.
Oh,
now
yes.
The kid's suing.
Yeah.
But
anyway, we're coming up to the top of the hour.
Yeah, we're coming in. I'm going to put on the music and just fade it out when it's time.
Yeah.
And that thing, I picked some different kind of music. Well, we played it before. We played it several times, but there's a reason for it. Push the magic button.
And you're getting it from the computer, I see.
Well, because I couldn't find the CD.
Oh. Uh-huh. What is it?
I'm a soccer fan, and tomorrow Houston is getting a chance to have a national championship with the Houston Dynamo. So we figured let's bring up the gay pimp and talk about soccer practice.
There we go, soccer practice, the gay pimp, I love it.
This is After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude.
Until next month.
And next week,
we'll be back.
That's right. Thank you, Gigi.
Something
dirty, yeah. Hey, dude, I was thinking we could go do something dirty, yeah.
Oh, I don't know, man. I mean, I like to do manly things. You know, just manly guys do manly things. You know what I mean?
Listen, I like to do manly things, but I like, baby, to do them with you. I was thinking we could go do something dirty, yeah. Dirty, yeah.
Dirty. Well, like what?
Sort of like soccer practice. Football polo team. Do some track and field on the football green. Go to the locker room. Do some weight training. Dude, it would be real hot if we join our main soccer practice.
PFT, your vote matters most. Now here's a word from one of our candidates.
This is Thomas Williams. I come to you today as our basic liberties are being attacked. The media in this country has failed to serve the public, instead focusing on serving corporate interests, right in step with the current administration. It is a time where we must stand up and defend our liberties. Freedom of speech is at center stage and must be upheld. KPFT is a valuable asset to us. We need to increase awareness and active participation in the station. As a member of the local station board, I'll actively work to protect this resource, exerting my continuous efforts to expand the listener base by actively working with underrepresented communities, working to develop new and innovative fundraising activities, and ensure that the programming is responsive to the diverse needs of the Houston region. I ask you, please support democracy and vote in the upcoming elections. A vote with KPFT is a vote for freedom. This is Thomas Williams, and I thank you for your time.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.